January 12th in Dallas, Texas, I'm going to stand across the ring from Sami Callihan again, and the stakes are higher. This time, it's for the World Championship, and I'm going to make history again.
It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster
conquered the street.
We like fighting a woman.
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
Come over here and fight me.
Fight me.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Thank you for making the Sound Off one of the top 10 sports podcasts on all of Podbean for the seventh straight year in 2019. Only bigger and better here in 2020. This is episode 634 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, January 12th, 2020. I am the Sala Monster. It was a bad day for Tessa Blanchard yesterday, and tonight she wrestles Sami Callihan for the Impact World title. I have a lot to say about what happened there. And it is the annual prediction show this week, where I take a look back at all the predictions I got wrong, the ones I got right, and then look into my crystal ball of what's to come in wrestling here in the wrestling world in 2020. That's coming up later in the show. There was also a tragic turn yesterday as La Parca passed away. Not the La Parca of WCW fame, who had strummed the guitar on a steel chair when he would walk out to the ring. He now goes by a different name, L.A. Park. This La Parca, La Parca 2, was portrayed by Jesus Escoboza, 55 years old. He passed away last night from complications stemming from a horrible accident during a match back in October where he went to do a tope out to the floor onto Rush. And between what looked like his foot catching the middle rope on the way out, which I think was really the root cause of what happened. But between his foot catching the rope, and he was also not going very fast. It was a relatively slow rate of speed that he had built up in executing the move. He fell short on the landing. And his head, it looked like his head also hit the floor a little bit, but really his head hit the very bottom part of the guardrail. And it looked like it compressed his head and neck on the landing. He just landed in the worst possible spot, and he laid there motionless. You know, he fractured his vertebrae. He was paralyzed for a while. There were reports that suggested over time some of the feeling came back in parts of his body, but he was basically paralyzed after that. He underwent multiple surgeries. I think he needed a tracheotomy at one point so he couldn't speak, but he was conscious enough, I guess, and able to communicate in other ways. So he was in and out of intensive care ever since. You know, I was reading some of the reports in The Observer and on some of these websites, like I'm sure a lot of you were, and hadn't heard anything in several weeks about this. You know, last update that I remember reading was that he was out of the hospital. You know, he wasn't out of the woods. He was still pretty messed up from the accident, but that he had at least been able to leave the hospital. And I don't know exactly what caused his death. Obviously, it stemmed from the injuries he sustained. I don't know if there was something new that developed or exactly what happened. The video, though, is even more disturbing to watch now in light of this. There was fan cam shot video that I'm sure if you wanted to for some reason, you can find it. But when the accident happened, there were clips of the exact spot, how he landed. And it's just brutal to watch. And there's been some disturbing ones, in all honesty. I mean, in recent years, you know, Perro Aguayo Jr., what happened to him, that was in that tag match when Rey Mysterio was in that match. He was one of the fastest rising stars in Mexico. And he died in the middle of a match. Silver King, not too long ago, what happened to him. And this one was just as tragic. Just a simple mistake. A few inches higher, and Rush catches him. It's unbelievable to think about. Just in a split second like that, just a few inches, you know, one way or the other can make all the difference in the world. At least then he would have, you know, Rush probably would have been able to break his fall. There was nothing he can do, though. It wasn't his fault. It's just awful. Just an awful situation. Thank you to everybody who keeps using the Audible link. You guys are taking advantage of the 30-day trial of the service. cashing in on the Kane book, the Hornswoggle book, Life is Short and So Am I. And there was at least one person who said they used the link to pre-order Jim Ross's next book, Under the Black Hat, which doesn't come out until the end of March. But you can get all of these books, only pick one, but you can get whichever one you want for free. So long as you sign up for a 30-day trial of the service with our link. It's our gift to you, a free book of your choosing, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. And if you want to become a PayPal VIP, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. You will see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page, or if it's easier, the email address to use is thesolomonster@gmail.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to Big Papa Slop, Dan Leopold. I am very happy to hear that Natalie is doing better. Thank you for the kind note. Deadpool James Herrera, the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, John Loose Cannon Lopez, the Florida Freebird Brian Passera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Radiant Ray Wrighton, always love hearing from Ray, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Killshot Keith Hart, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Stephen Handyman, Halistic, Critical Condition, Kevin Smith, Defined Real, thank you, Josh the Shooter Stockton, Terrifying Terrence Hickman, Your Excellence, Evangelos Feronis, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, the Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes, the Musical Mercenary, Hisham Dahoud, the Winterville Warrior, Joshua Fornville, he's a first-time donator, and the Monarch, Maximilian Zielik, also a first-time donator. So thank you to them both for joining the PayPal roll call this week, our ever-growing roster of PayPal superstars, I guess. I have to come up with a different word for it, though. Superstars is so played out. There's got to be a better word to use. And I also have to shout out the Black Phoenix, Brandon Yelverton, who created and starred in a parody sketch on his YouTube channel recreating Chris Jericho's WWF debut when he interrupted The Rock on Monday Night Raw back in 1999. It's very well done. You can check it out. Just search for Enlightened Comedy on YouTube, and comedy is spelled with a K and not a C. It's mostly a parody and skit channel. He's got more wrestling content on the way. So again, Enlightened Comedy, comedy with a K. Just search that out on YouTube. Also on iTunes, we got some love from I Love Music. Says he listens to a bunch of different podcasts, wrestling and non-wrestling, and the Sound Off is by far his favorite. And Brandon has been a proud listener since the summer of 2018. And Try Hard Bacon. What a great name. Try Hard Bacon has been listening for almost 5 years. He stopped watching WWE altogether, and he listens to the podcast to keep up with everything that is going on. Another ever-growing list of people I hear from who say they've given up on WWE, and all they do is listen to podcasts and watch YouTube shows to keep up with what's going on. I guess that's bad for WWE. It's good for people like me. So thank you. It's kind of sad that it's come to that, but I appreciate it. We are up to 2,000 plus entries so far in the Royal Rumble pool in our Facebook group. Still plenty of time to get in because the deadline is not until Royal Rumble Sunday, a few hours before the pay-per-view. But the earlier the better, because Zach Hulker, who is overseeing the entire thing and always does a tremendous job, puts a lot of time and effort into it, is going to be issuing everyone's numbers. People have been asking, when am I going to get my number? Zach is the guy to answer that question, and that will be happening very soon. I think typically it's about a week in advance. And then as new people enter, they'll get their numbers as they're added to whatever new pools may open up. So I'm sure he'll shed more light on that in the group very soon. I would not look for any numbers, though, at least until probably not even this week. I'm guessing it would be the following week, a week before the pay-per-view. So that's coming up quick. But yeah, we're already over 2,000 entries. I don't know if we're going to break our record from last year. We'll come close. It was over 2,400 last year. Right now we're between 2,000 and 2,100 as I am recording this. And remember, the only way to enter is you got to be, first of all, in the Facebook group. I've been trying to approve people as quickly as possible. I think in the last week or so, I think we've added something like 200 plus new members to the group. Keep in mind that we have over 9,500 still sitting in queue. And that's a lot of people. And not all of them are going to be in, you know, admitted into the group for various reasons. But anyway, so if you are in queue and don't believe that you should be still stuck in queue, just shoot me a message so I am aware of it. And then you can always cancel the pending request and reissue it. So that should bring it back up to the front. So anyway, join the group. And once you do, you'll see the post pinned to the top in the announcement section. You'll see it says Royal Rumble Pool. You'll see an illustration of my ugly mug. And just hit the like button. That's all you got to do. You don't even have to leave a comment. Just hit like on the post. Zach will be notified, and he will add you to the list of people to get a number. You know the rules for this. Whatever number you get corresponds to the order of entry in the men's and women's Royal Rumble matches. If you draw number 12, and number 12 turns out to be Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns goes on to win the men's Rumble, for example, or if it's Sasha Banks, and Sasha goes on to win the women's Rumble, you will win your pool. Each pool has, I believe, 30 people in it, and you will then move on to the ultimate Royal Rumble pool that I will be doing and picking winners at random. And those top three winners will come from that ultimate final Rumble pool. So from your individual pool, you don't win anything except bragging rights. But in any event, if you want to get in on the fun, please do so. Don't wait until the last minute. And let's see if we can try to get up closer to that record that we set last year. I also have to mention, prizes are going to be awarded to the first, second, and third place winners coming out of that final Rumble pool. Not sure what that'll be. It might be a t-shirt. It might be something like that. But Pro Wrestling Magic, found out this week, is offering free tickets to their February 22nd show in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. For each of the winners, third place winner will get one free general admission ticket, which is a $20 value. Second place will receive two free general admission tickets, a $40 value. And the first place winner will receive two free front row seats, which is a $60 value. Again, that's to the February 22nd show in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. Assuming, of course, that those winners, I don't know if those winners are going to be local to the tri-state area, so that may not matter in the end. But anyway, it's very nice of them to make that offer. I appreciate that. If you missed it, I recorded two shows. One for each night of Wrestle Kingdom last weekend, plus a review of the New Year Dash show. That's part of the day two Wrestle Kingdom review video. Those two videos are up right now on the YouTube channel. I also combined them into audio form and pushed it out to the feed. So lots of different ways to check out my Wrestle Kingdom coverage. We just passed 55,000 subscribers this week on the YouTube channel, so I thank you. It really wasn't that long ago I passed 50K, which was a huge milestone for me on there. And so now we're over 55, and hopefully before long we'll make that march to 60 and onward and upward. So thank you for all the support on there. I also recorded and I ranked my top five wrestlers of the decade list for 2010 to 2019. I guess if you want to be technical about it, the decade is still in progress. Actually, I don't know if the decade, would it still be technically considered in progress? I guess it would be. But anyway, no one wants to wait to do their decade list until the start of 2021. So that list is up as a Sound Off Extra exclusive on the YouTube channel right now, if you missed it. Without giving away number one on the list, I don't want to give it all away. I will say that number one is not a WWE star, I will say that. But I will also say that I had Brock Lesnar as my wrestler of the decade in WWE. He's not number one, but he's on the list, and he is the number one wrestler of the decade for WWE. And in the video, I explain why that is, because not everybody is obviously going to like that pick or going to agree with it. But I lay out the case for why I feel, in spite of the fact that it may not be the most popular choice, why I think it's the correct one. I do have one regret, though, and I wanted to mention it here. I do have one regret, and that is that I could not include John Cena on that list. I tried. John Cena and Chris Jericho were those two that I really was trying to, you know, do they make the cut of the top five? But I just, in the end, I couldn't put them above, you know, who I had as those bottom two choices. But I really thought long and hard about it. I felt bad about not being able to include John Cena on there. And I think if I ever had the list to do over again, I might just slot him in there under Brock Lesnar. You know, even slowing down these last few years, in 2019, he was virtually a ghost. I mean, outside of his WrestleMania cameo as the Doctor of Thugonomics. So despite slowing down the last few years, the impact that he had on this decade, this past decade, from the matches with CM Punk in 2011. I mean, you could say he also had a negative impact at the start of the decade with the Nexus stuff, but the matches with CM Punk in 2011, even right up through their television match, which might have been their last match together on television in 2013 before WrestleMania that year. I call it the pile driver match. That's probably how a lot of people remember that. Punk busting out a pile driver. Got chewed out for it backstage by Vince McMahon. The money match against The Rock at WrestleMania 28. My very first WrestleMania live in person. And probably still to this day, I believe, the biggest business they've ever done for a WrestleMania main event was built around this first, you know, once in a lifetime, which turned out to be twice in a lifetime, with John Cena against The Rock in The Rock's hometown of Miami. It was a gigantic match, the biggest possible match at the time, probably, that they could have put together. And he was part of the build and part of that huge WrestleMania main event. His matches with Brock Lesnar, including that SummerSlam squash. You know, his SummerSlam match putting over Daniel Bryan. The Cena U.S. title open challenge back in 2015, all those matches on Raw. His rivalry with AJ Styles in 2016, the dream match they called it at Money in the Bank, and then their SummerSlam match that year, and then Cena tying Ric Flair with 16 world titles at the Royal Rumble in 2017, another excellent match between those two, and just overall, what this man meant business-wise to the company. I think with a second crack at it, I would have bumped one of my bottom two choices to make room on the list for John Cena. That's really my only regret as I look back on that list that I put together. So anyway, for the full list, ranked from 1 to 5, check it out on the YouTube channel. The cards for the next big batch of New Japan shows coming out of Wrestle Kingdom have been announced after their New Beginning in USA tour, in the USA tour, which kicks off January 24th in Tampa. That's the same night as the NWA pay-per-view. The New Beginning in Sapporo then takes place. Back-to-back nights on Saturday, February 1st and Sunday, February 2nd. Night 1 will be headlined by Hirooki Goto defending his never openweight title against Shingo Takagi. Tomohiro Ishii takes on Evil, or soon to be Mr. Io Shirai, soon enough. Okada and Jon Moxley will team up for the first time ever against Tai Chi and Minoru Suzuki. And Naito and Sonata team up to take on Kenta and Jay White in a rematch from New Year Dash. Then Night 2. Night 2 is headlined by Okada versus Tai Chi and Zack Sabre Jr. defending his RevPro British Heavyweight title against Will Ospreay, whose injury, I take it, is, I hope, not as serious as originally feared if he's out there wrestling. Hopefully he doesn't make it worse. Then on February 9th, that's the big one, the New Beginning in Osaka. Naito, Tetsuya Naito, defends both his IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental titles against Kenta. And I cannot see a title change here. See, if it was just for the Intercontinental title, then I would say yes. I think Kenta would win the championship, but not both. Not both. I don't care how much heat he has right now. I'm not saying they can't do a title change. I just don't see it. They did at least have Kevin Kelly say something about Kenta sort of jumping the line in front of Jay White to get that first title shot when it was Jay White who beat Kota Ibushi on night 2 of Wrestle Kingdom. And Kenta lost. He lost the NEVER title in his match against Goto. And so Jay White, you know, in theory, would have a legitimate beef to be upset about something like that. Jon Moxley on that show will defend his United States Championship. This is the match I'm looking forward to. Against Minoru Suzuki. Hiromu Takahashi will defend his junior heavyweight title against Ryu Lee. Roppongi 3K defend their junior heavyweight tag team titles against Kanemaru and El Desperado. And Sonata takes on Jay White. Those are not all of the matches, but those are the key ones. And I am planning to try to catch each of the three nights, or as much of them as I can, next month. That's one of my New Year's resolutions to myself. I know time is sparse. There's not enough of it, but here in this new year, I'd like to do a better job of checking out more of the New Japan shows. I mean, these are smaller shows. I mean, obviously, compared to Wrestle Kingdom or something like Dominion or any of the G1 stuff, they're technically smaller shows. But I want to do a better job of keeping up with them. So this week's Observer had a note on Katsuyori Shibata, who was missed at those Wrestle Kingdom shows last weekend. I thought for sure he'd be there, maybe in Goto's corner, and he wasn't. But according to the Observer, he did try to get cleared by New Japan doctors. And not only did they not clear him, obviously, they told him in no uncertain terms that there was a 0% chance he would ever be cleared. Not a 1% chance, a 0.1% chance, 0% chance that he will ever be medically cleared to wrestle. And as much as I would love to see him back in the ring against Kenta, it's for the best. Because I have to stop myself and remind myself, this man had part of his skull removed. Let us not forget, that's how serious that injury was that he sustained after that match with Okada. He had to have part of his skull removed. Maybe he could do some physical spots. I mean, it was great when he came back and they did that angle with him last year. I thought that was fantastic. But to wrestle a full match, the style that he used to wrestle, I can totally understand why this company would tell him in no uncertain terms, you are not going to wrestle. You are not going to be cleared. So there I was on Wednesday, all ready to award Sad Tweet of the Decade honors. Technically, it would be Sad Tweet of the Decade. I mean, we're still early in the decade, but Sad Tweet of the Decade to Fox employee CM Punk, who had quite the overreaction on Twitter to something that The Miz said after WWE Backstage went off the air on Tuesday. And then Saturday said, hold my beer. And suddenly a new contender emerged. So instead of just awarding the title to one person, I thought to myself, well, why not just award it to both of them and make them co-champions this week, like Chris Jericho and Chyna? First, Miz was the in-studio guest on WWE Backstage. Punk was not there. Punk has not been making many appearances on the show at all, really. I mean, Ember Moon has probably made more appearances on Backstage than CM Punk has. And by the way, if I can detour for just a second, I saw the interview that Ember Moon did with Booker T on his Hall of Fame podcast, which is worth a watch. It is up in full right now on his Reality of Wrestling channel on YouTube. And hearing her tell the story of how she ruptured her Achilles, because she's been out for a while. She's been out for a few months now, suffered a very serious injury, and still really doesn't have a timetable on exactly when she's going to be back. It's the same kind of injury that Xavier Woods suffered, although it sounds like hers may have been even more serious, the way that she ruptured it. But she told the story of how the rupture occurred. And it's amazing. They have a lot of women out right now from injuries. You know, Ember's only one of them. Ember Moon is out. Mickie James is still out, although I don't know if she's already recovered from her injury, and they're just either waiting to figure out what to do with her, or they are coming up with some other role for her. I know she was auditioned in a commentary role a few months ago, I think on the Main Event. But Mickey's out, Ember's out, Nia Jax is still out, Ruby Riott is still out, Kairi Sane is still out. So anyway, Ember says she didn't get hurt in a match. She got hurt doing one of those dumb 24/7 title segments on TV chasing after R-Truth. And she planted her foot a certain way, and she heard a pop. And she didn't realize she was even hurt until she got home. She flew all the way home, went to bed, woke up the next morning, tried to get out of bed, and could not put any weight on the foot. Her foot just was not working. And then she realized, well, something's wrong here. We ought to go to the hospital and find out what's wrong. But again, that's a serious injury. And just imagine losing a year or more of your career because of a stupid 24/7 title sprint, is basically what it was. If only the roster would chase after the writers backstage the way they do R-Truth whenever they pitch a stupid idea. They would get all the cardio they need. They wouldn't even have to go to the gym. Anyway, back to Punk. So we're not going to see CM Punk on backstage again until January 21st. So not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday. But he saw the clip. He was not tagged in anything. This was a clip that was tweeted out when the show was over. It was a clip on the Fox, WWE on Fox, Twitter account of The Miz. He was probably doing a selfie thing with his own phone. He was taking his earpiece out. The show had just ended. And he was just exchanging some playful comments with Renee Young and Paige. He goes, you know, I thought this was the best episode of WWE Backstage. Yeah, what did you guys think? And they're all laughing. And Renee Young said it was close, or, you know, it was around the best. Maybe it was the best. And The Miz said, sorry, I didn't change the culture. You know, clearly mocking what CM Punk said when he first showed up on backstage. And he made that comment about how, you know, just when, you know, you change the questions, I change the culture. It really was a very corny, lame line, and I'm still not even sure what he meant by that. Miz was clearly, though, just playing around. It's a stupid little clip. He was just playing around. But CM Punk did not take very kindly to the comment. And he tweeted this in response before pulling the old tweet and delete. He said, go suck a blood money covered dick in Saudi Arabia, you fucking dork. And then he deleted it like a coward. Unless he had a moment of self-awareness or self-reflection and he realized how stupid it was to even go after The Miz in the first place. Of all the things for him to get hot about to warrant that kind of response, that's what triggered that kind of reaction. I'm not even getting into a philosophical debate about them going to Saudi Arabia, but to go after Miz for that, I did not realize just how deep that hatred went for The Miz getting that WrestleMania main event that he never did. I know he talked about it on his DVD many years ago, how much it bothered him, but holy shit, dude. Let it go. It's going to be 9 years. Just let it go. Talk about a massive overreaction. Miz, you know, and the thing about Miz, and I looked, I said, maybe there's some other explanation for it. Maybe Miz at some point made comments about Punk while Punk, you know, in the years that Punk was gone, he talked trash about him or something. One of the only things I was able to find was Miz actually sticking up for CM Punk. He talked to TMZ a few years ago. This is before Punk was about to fight for the first time in UFC, and there were a lot of people dumping on him and ragging on him for it. And, you know, TMZ cornered The Miz, and The Miz was actually very complimentary, and he stuck up for Punk, and he had nice things to say about him, and he's realizing his dream, and he should be able, you know, to do that. And I couldn't find anything nefarious or offensive that Miz has said about Punk over the years, but Punk just cannot let that go. He just cannot let that WrestleMania main event thing go. It's kind of hard to change the culture anyway when you only show up on the show once a month. And I like seeing CM Punk on backstage, you know, the rare occasions that I catch the show. You know, I said when he first popped up on the show and he had that first appearance, it brought new life to the show. I really enjoyed it. But the response seems disproportionate to what The Miz originally said. Punk's just being an asshole. Plain and simple. It's not a work. It's not an angle. He's just being a dick. And since he saw enough to take the tweet down, maybe he ought to take the same advice he gave to Seth Rollins and just stop tweeting. And then we have our co-champion of the week. And I don't know if she's walking out with the Impact World title tonight or not, but if she does not, at least she's getting one title here. And that is Tessa Blanchard. Tessa Blanchard lost to Sami Callihan a few months ago in a match that I thought was damn good. And I have said that I would not at all mind if she was the one to beat Sami and take the world title at their Hard to Kill pay-per-view tonight. Obviously, I don't follow Impact week to week like I did many years ago. But I've been keeping up with the Tessa stuff. I talked about the clip that racked up all those views last week. The New York City street brawl that they had, where they the brawl that spilled out into the streets, and it was very well done. It was a pretty cool brawl. All to build up to this match on pay-per-view tonight. I was in the car yesterday, and I heard something for the first time that I had never heard before. I heard a radio ad locally here in New York for an Impact pay-per-view. I don't remember the last time I heard any kind of mainstream advertising like that, at least here in the New York market, for any TNA or Impact-related event. So they've been going hard, really trying to promote this match and promote this show very hard tonight. And then on Saturday, one day before said pay-per-view, and I don't know if anything specific prompted this tweet or not. It seemed kind of random that she would just throw it out there, but Tessa decided to take to Twitter and say this. She said, "Hey women, try supporting one another. Cool things happen." And with those 9 words, it's been a very long time. I'm sure I've seen this before, because Twitter has, it's killed careers, it's hurt careers, but it's been a very long time since I have seen a wrestler burn themselves to the ground with one simple click on that little red button that says tweet. This led to multiple wrestlers, multiple female stars from all different promotions. WWE, you know, NXT, AEW, MLW, people from all over came forward to talk about what an awful person Tessa Blanchard was to them, relaying their own story or backing up other awful stories that they've heard or that they maybe witnessed themselves. Starting with the NWA Women's Champion. Really, what got the ball rolling on this was a reaction tweet from Allison Kay, the former Sienna from Impact Wrestling, who lobbed this bomb at Tessa. She said, "Remember when you spat in a black woman's face and called her the N-word in Japan? Was that you supporting women? The audacity of this tweet." Chelsea Green of NXT, and we've actually seen her even recently on Monday Night Raw, another Impact alum, she co-signed that tweet about the incident in Japan, and then she had her own thoughts on Tessa's tweet. She said, "You've consistently put down, bullied, and belittled countless female co-workers, including me. Is that support?" And Tessa replied to her and says, "I've never been anything but kind to you. I have dealt with mean girls since I started. Not saying I'm a saint. Hell, I've had my ups and downs, and I've made silly decisions. Such is life. You have zero merit in your comments. Instead of putting me down here for a little clout, you've got my number." So she's calling Chelsea Green a clout chaser. And then the only other comment that she has made about all of this is to say, "Not true. That's my statement, and the most attention I will give it because of how actually ridiculous it is." Now, if it was she said, with her and Allison, it would still be troubling to hear, you know, an accusation like that. I've never heard that story before about the incident in Japan. But, okay, fine. It's one person's word against Tessa's. Who knows? Maybe Allison Kay, you know, is just not a fan of hers or whatever. It's one person. But then the wrestler who was allegedly spat on and called the N-word came forward to confirm the story. La Rosa Negra, I believe, is the name that she goes by, Black Rose. She's a veteran. She's been wrestling for well over a decade, even longer than that from what I saw, well over 15 years. She thanked Allison and Chelsea for stepping forward with their comments and says that the incident happened in Japan back in 2017. And Big Swole chimed in. Big Swole, who just got signed by AEW. And if you only watch WWE or NXT, she was part of, I think, the last Mae Young Classic. She's Cedric Alexander's wife. But she just got signed to a deal with AEW. She chimed in with this. She said, "Since we're telling stories, Big Swole's turn. I won't speak on all the other stories, but the one about La Rosa I know personally. This past year at WrestleCade, I spoke to her about this and about hashing it out with Tessa. I've spoken to Tessa as well after talking with La Rosa, and I decided it needed to be dealt with. a conversation needed to happen because this was getting intense over the years. As a black woman, this sickened me that this happened to a friend of mine. We have been dealing with this since it happened. It's just now finding light on social media. People are entitled to deal with this how they want. I just want the world to know the last part of the story. So here's the problem. To take Tessa at her word, and boy, have some people really just, they don't want to hear any of this stuff. They come out, I've gotten comments in my own replies, you know, fake news, there's no proof. Yeah, because there's no, I guess because there's no cell phone video, it never happened. You know, I mean, I remember growing up and going to school and reading about Abraham Lincoln being shot. But you know what? I didn't see video of it. So I guess it didn't happen. I mean, hell, for all I know, Lincoln can still be out there. Because there's no footage. I didn't see it. You didn't see it. Who's to say it happened? So, been a lot of comments like that. A lot of dumb comments. And I get it when people say, look, you can't just take what these people say at face value right off the bat and just bury Tessa and not give her a chance to either defend herself or maybe other people step forward and say, well, that story isn't exactly accurate. Like, I'm not saying jump on the woman, let's cancel Tessa and all this other stuff, but just the immediate comments. And as more and more names came out, people just, in some cases, didn't want to hear it. Nope, they're all jealous. They're all chasing clout. No footage, no proof. So therefore, it didn't happen. A lot of people really exposing themselves. But here's the problem. To take Tessa at her word that this never happened, which is what she said, right? Never happened. To do that is to call all of these other women liars. And that becomes a lot harder to do the more voices that come forward and speak out about what happened here, including the person in question who allegedly got spat on and called the N-word. Now that we know who it was. Isla Dawn from NXT UK reacted to Tessa's initial tweet. As someone who experienced your bullying firsthand, received regular verbal abuse, was spat on, so now person number two who claims to have been spat on by her, had rumors spread about me, dealt with multiple attempts by you to blacklist me from other companies and more, I just pray you now follow your own advice. Shanna from AEW. She did more nasty stuff in Japan. Never forget, practice what you preach, sweetheart. I stand by La Rosa. She's a fun-loving person who would never disrespect anyone. Much love to you, Rosa. The former Rebel from TNA. I like to think people change over time, but I can confirm the bad behavior and non-supportive attitude. In Japan, I was there. Priscilla Kelly from MLW. Remember publicly putting me down on Twitter last year for something that didn't involve you whatsoever, then continuing to drag my name to other people for it? Pepperidge Farm remembers. You should probably delete this tweet. There was another wrestler, a retired wrestler named Tara Calloway, in reference to Tessa. She had this to say. That time that somebody got into a legit fight in a battle royal, came to the locker room after and told every single female that they were trash, then got into another legit fight in the locker room. Because that was fun. And apparently poor Chris Dickinson had to break up that fight. Casey Michael of the Squared Circle Sirens website, who's kind of known as somebody who's broken a lot of stories before about the ladies, you know, at the all over wrestling, really. But, you know, at the Performance Center, NXT, he's broken a lot of stories before. Casey Michael chimed in. He says she bullied Renee Michelle at an indie show, and they had a tussle of some sort. Renee Michelle is the wife of Drake Maverick. Tweet after tweet, and there may have been others that I missed for all I know. Those are just the ones that I saw. But the Japan story, I mean, look, all these other stories about you bullied me, you did this, you did that, it sounds horrible to hear, but let's not get away from what the real story here is, which is this Japan story. That's the most disturbing. That she would spit on somebody and call them the N-word. That's not something that you just dismiss. That's not something that you just sweep under the rug. But predictably, you know, I saw a lot of the usual tweets. People change. They grow. They evolve. Sometimes, yeah, but she's not being accused of doing this as a 12-year-old. This allegedly happened in 2017. Barely 3 years ago. Another take I saw. How convenient that all of this comes out and they pile on this woman the day before the biggest match of her life, where she's probably going to win the Impact World Championship. What these people fail to understand is that the only reason any of this even happened in the first place is because Tessa decided now would be a good time for me to go ahead and tweet about how women should be supportive of other women. That's what started all of this. She brought this all on herself. Because she obviously hasn't done a good job of practicing what she preaches. Or else she wouldn't have had half a dozen women come forward with stories about all the awful, nasty things that Tessa Blanchard has done to, quote, support them. That's why they came out in the first place. If she would have just kept her mouth shut and not said anything, none of this would have ever happened. Not when it did. Maybe eventually this would have come out. But it wouldn't have come out yesterday, one right after the other like that. She has absolutely nobody to blame for this but herself. It's like, it'd be like Jeffrey Dahmer if he was alive and on Twitter telling people they should all become vegetarians. I'm sure he would be dragged for that statement, and rightfully so. They found it hypocritical, and so they decided to speak up. That's what happened. That's the only reason that any of these women said anything when they did. It's not some grand conspiracy between all of these women. They all plotted and coordinated and came together. All these women from different promotions, who in some cases may not even know each other. They, what, conspired? They had a fucking WhatsApp chat going. Hey, you know, let's, on this day, on Saturday, at 2 p.m., let's all come out. I'll start it, and you guys just follow suit. No. Put the tinfoil hats down. That's not how this worked. They weren't plotting for weeks in advance to do what they did. The stories about her attitude are not anything new. They were around after the first Mae Young Classic, when WWE opted not to sign her when she lost in the first round, which was pretty shocking. But she lost, I think, to Kairi Sane, if I remember, and she got bounced from the tournament, and she was never signed. The obvious question was, as talented as she is, why didn't WWE snatch her up when they had the chance? But that story, if it went down the way that it appears it may have gone down, and it became a lot harder to not believe it after multiple people came out to confirm it, then that's just disgusting. And she's going to have to answer for it at some point beyond refusing to answer because it's so ridiculous. That answer doesn't cut it. I mean, this is a serious accusation that's being made against her character. I mean, are you saying that Big Swole is lying? She's making up a story that she's been in touch with Rosa and with Tessa? Are you calling her a liar? That's basically what you're doing. If you're just going to automatically dismiss everyone's accusations, then they're all just a bunch of liars. They're all just a bunch of jealous haters. You can see why it becomes more and more difficult to just take what Tessa is saying at face value. If I were her, and it really did never happen, if I were her and somebody claimed that I did something awful like that, I would not let something like that slide so easily. Now, do I think that this is going to affect the outcome of tonight's championship match? I really don't. And I still think she's going to win the title. Look, maybe she wasn't going to win the title anyway before any of this happened. There's no guarantee that she's going to win the championship. I think she is. I thought she was, and I still think she is. The crowd reaction is going to be very interesting to watch. It may have no effect at all. And if it doesn't, then I guess she can get away with ignoring it for a while. But this is not just going to go away. The next time she does an interview or something, it's going to come up. If it didn't happen, speak up. Speak up and tell people, this didn't happen, here's why. Or here's what really happened. So she's going to have to address it again at some point. She's not going to get away with just posting one tweet and it goes away. Poof, it vanishes. That's not how this works. She will be put on the spot at some point to have to address it, and she's going to have to. And to deny it is to call multiple colleagues of hers liars. And I am just finding it very difficult to believe that all of these women, including the victim in question, decided to just manufacture a horrible story like that out of thin air. For what? For what purpose? Jealousy? Please. Tessa may end up making history this weekend, but this is not a story that's going to just go away, and it's all because of one sad tweet. a tweet that she herself sent. She told women to support each other and that cool things will happen. Well, guess what? They did support each other. It just wasn't in the way that she would have liked. Some thoughts on Raw from Monday night in Oklahoma City. Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar were there. Paul Heyman came out at the start of the show and he made a very interesting announcement. And the announcement is that basically there's no competition for Brock Lesnar and the WWE Championship. And so, at the Royal Rumble, Brock Lesnar is not going to defend his championship in a singles match or a multi-man match or anything like that. Seemingly, the title will not be on the line here either, but he is going to enter the Royal Rumble match himself. And he's going to do so from the number one position. Now, I say seemingly as far as this being non-title because they haven't exactly confirmed for sure that the title will not be on the line. I assume it won't be. If it was going to be on the line, they would have mentioned that. It would have been the selling point of the Royal Rumble, that the championship would be on the line like it was back in 2016. So unless they change their mind, we'll find out tomorrow night if they mention it, but the title will not be on the line here. And him being in the Royal Rumble match inspired a lot of negative opinion. People like sent me emails, what sense does this make? It makes no sense. Why is he not defending the championship? I'm okay with this. In fact, I like the idea. I like the idea a lot. There was no one built up to wrestle Brock Lesnar for the championship at the Royal Rumble. When I was thinking about this myself last week and putting the predictions and everything together for 2020, and I was looking and saying, who is Brock going to defend the title against at the Royal Rumble, which is coming up in only a few weeks? Who has been built up? Who has been positioned as somebody who should be challenging Lesnar for the championship? We have not seen Lesnar in a while. Okay, so there's no, it's not like the last time we saw him, there was a seed planted or some kind of angle was shot that, okay, that would be the obvious match. No, there was nothing. And right now you've got Kevin Owens and you've got Samoa Joe. They're all wrapped up with Seth Rollins and AOP. AJ Styles is doing his thing with Randy Orton. Everybody is occupied. The one rumor that I saw, the only even remote mention of a possible title match at the Royal Rumble that I had seen in recent weeks for Brock Lesnar, was that he would defend the championship against Ricochet. And I laughed and I said, what has Ricochet done on this show in the last month to even hint at the idea that he belonged in a WWE championship match? The answer is nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I don't care how good the match may or may not have been, and he would have bounced around for Brock like a rubber ball. And Brock does tend to work better with the smaller guys. Brock Lesnar against Ricochet in a title match makes no sense. You talk about things making no sense. That makes no sense. So that was not, I don't think that was ever going to happen. Rey Mysterio, he already lost to Lesnar. Drew McIntyre needs to be in the Rumble, and he is. He officially entered this week. He needs to be in the Rumble and then win and go on to challenge for the championship at WrestleMania. Not fight Brock Lesnar in a time filler match, you know, 2 or 3 months before Mania. So again, there was no obvious opponent for him to begin with. So instead of doing a meaningless match, or even worse, just not having him on the show at all, this at least adds some intrigue to the Royal Rumble match. Now, maybe the rumors are true and Cain Velasquez is going to enter the Royal Rumble and maybe he'll even enter in the number two spot. And he'll dump Brock Lesnar out of the ring straight away. Brock will be gone in the first, 2 or 3 minutes of the match. Short night for Brock Lesnar so he can hit the showers and get the hell back home. I sure as hell don't want to see Cain Velasquez win the whole damn thing. I don't mind him if he's going to be in the Rumble, fine. Him winning the Royal Rumble? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, I'm sure he'll be a surprise entrant. He'll be the one to take out Lesnar. And then, maybe Lesnar ends up dumping him. He reaches up and he dumps him out and then boom, he has an opponent for WrestleMania. Yawn is my reaction to all of that. My reaction to the idea of Cain Velasquez challenging for the championship at WrestleMania is yawn. What I would love to see, since Paul Heyman in his promo made sure to emphasize NXT, and there's a few ideas I'd like to see. I mentioned McIntyre, I'll get back to him in a second. But another idea that I would love to see, since there's no man apparently on Raw, SmackDown, or the NXT roster, according to Paul Heyman, who could take out the Beast, I'd love to see him face off with at least one NXT star in that Royal Rumble match. Maybe more than one. Lesnar and Matt Riddle, obviously. You're probably sick of me even talking about that at this point, because I've been talking about this for how many months now? But I'm telling you, that would make for a kick-ass match at WrestleMania. If they actually had the guts, if they had the balls to actually do that at WrestleMania, it would be a kick-ass match. How about Keith Lee? I think Riddle or Lee, either one of them, would be two fine choices. Even if just squaring up with Lesnar in the Rumble match, forget WrestleMania, just to have that moment, just to have that one, you know, sequence with him, would be fantastic. Imagine Keith Lee pouncing Brock Lesnar out over the top rope. Because Lesnar, when he takes big bumps, I know he's older now and everything, but Brock's a great bump taker, especially when he was younger, and he was even more bigger and all swelled up than he is now. I mean, he would launch himself through the ropes, out over the top rope. He would take some pretty big bumps and over-exaggerated, but they look great. Remember back in 2002, there was one episode of Raw where Shawn Michaels gave him a super kick and he went flying out over the top rope. So imagine Keith Lee pouncing this man out over the top rope and eliminating him from the Royal Rumble. I would much rather see them take a chance on an NXT star wrestling Brock at WrestleMania than I would Cain Velasquez. Now, maybe that isn't the box office choice. They're thinking, that's not how they think of things. They think of things in terms of what is the biggest attraction? What's the biggest box office that we could do? And I will give you, Cain Velasquez, at least, he was a star in another sport. He has a name. You know, how much weight that name carries here in 2020, I don't know. But, you know, would Cain and Brock be a bigger match that they could promote out in the media than Brock and Keith Lee? Yes. Which is why it's not going to happen. And fine, I understand that. But I'd still love to see it. Kofi Kingston is another possibility. Now, I really don't have interest in seeing Kofi go back to the WrestleMania main event to challenge Brock for the championship after he was destroyed in 8 seconds. Kofi had his run. It ended. He had this great story going into WrestleMania last year. He achieved something that had never been done before, you know, in WWE. It was great. It was great. It just does not interest me as a WrestleMania match. But what a moment of revenge it would be if he was to sneak up behind Brock and dump him out of the ring. Given they're on separate brands, it may be the one chance he has to get revenge for that 8-second loss. Because don't forget, Brock's on Raw. Kofi's on SmackDown. If they're going to stay true to this brand split, it's not like they could do the match anyway. We still don't know the rules for the Royal Rumble. If you're going to be able to choose the champion you wrestle, or if you just got to stick to whatever brand you're on. Now, maybe it's been years since they've even done that. But the point is, they've done it before. They can change the rules. They can do anything they want. If they want to change the rules this year and introduce some kind of new wacky rule, they could do that. But here's another thought. And I like this idea too. Stop fucking around and playing games with Drew McIntyre and let him win the Royal Rumble. You know, on the show Monday night, and this has been going on for a few weeks now, but on the show Monday night, we saw more personality, like babyface personality from Drew McIntyre than we have at any other point since he came back to the company, or at least since he was promoted from NXT to the main roster. He had a match with No Way Jose, and obviously he beat him quickly. But he's starting to do these little things that get you over as a babyface. Shawn Michaels used to stomp the leg, you know, before the super kick, and everyone has their little thing that they do. Daniel Bryan would put his fingers in the air for the S thing before the running knee. And now before the Claymore kick, what he's started doing is he puts his fingers in the air and has the crowd count with him. Was it 1-2-3 or 3-2-1, whatever it is. But he has them counting along before he does the kick. That's a babyface move. And then after he won, he got on the mic and he said, "How many of you want to see me give another Claymore?" So he went out of the ring. His body's everywhere because he had wiped out all of the conga line people. And he threw Jose back in the ring and did the same thing. Had the crowd count along, 1-2-3, and then he gave him another Claymore. So he's starting to come out of his shell in that way. They're clearly testing the waters, if nothing else. to see if he'll get over. And the people were into it. The people were cheering. The people were counting along with him. If that was a test, he passed. At least this one week, he passed. There's something there. It feels like now is the time. I thought he would have already had his time last year. It didn't happen. How much longer are you going to wait? You want to wait until 2021? Yeah, let's take another year off. Stop fucking around. And if you want to go all in on this guy, now is the time to do it. Because I think that with the right promotion and the right, just the right build, a Lesnar-McIntyre match. McIntyre is a big dude. Him face-to-face, standing side-by-side with Brock would be an impressive sight. I think that could work. There's other possibilities, too. Aleister Black. How quickly do you want to push Aleister Black? Is it too soon to give him a surprise Rumble win and promote him in a championship match at WrestleMania? Probably. Probably. And actually, the match that I think would be more interesting if they were going to do that would be him against The Fiend. You want to throw a wild idea out there. Aleister Black wins the Royal Rumble and he chooses to face The Fiend. If you have the choice of your champion. That's a WrestleMania match that actually, or at least the build-up to it, could be more interesting than even doing something with Brock and Black. The point is, there's actually a few different fun possibilities for what to do with Brock Lesnar in that Royal Rumble match that don't involve Lesnar winning. So I don't get some of the hate that I'm seeing from people shitting on the idea. They had no interesting, credible opponents for him to get into the ring with on this show. So instead, they're spicing the Rumble match up a little bit. I like it. I think it's a great idea. We had Rey Mysterio and Andrade Cien Almas. They had another good match. United States Championship, the usual good match with these two. Mysterio hit a Canadian Destroyer, went for the pin. He got the three count. But Zelina Vega had placed Andrade's foot on the rope. Referee didn't see it, even though they played Rey's music. They gave him the championship, but nope. Referee sees the leg post-match and says, we got to restart the match. So later on, Rey goes up top. Andrade rolls out of the ring. And Mysterio jumps onto Andrade. And he kind of hesitated. He saw Zelina Vega, he hesitated. Andrade, though, ended up dumping Mysterio into Zelina. Zelina falls down. Now, Mysterio very briefly is showing concern for her. Andrade just grabbed him right away, threw Rey into the ring steps. The referee is trying to communicate something to Andrade. He'll hear none of it. He throws Rey into the ring. He's setting up for the Hammerlock DDT and the win. But the referee stops Andrade before he can do the move. He gets in there. He stops him. Mysterio is down. He's selling it like the ref is checking on him, like he thinks he may be knocked out or something. He's telling him something. He basically tells him to go outside. So Rey goes outside, and now he's checking again on Zelina Vega, and he's showing concern. It's as though the referee told him, hey, go redo the spot and show more concern for her this time. Either that or he thought Rey was hurt, but I watched this again, and the referee was acting very weird before he would have even thought that Rey may have been hurt on that, being thrown into the ring step. So I don't buy that. I think there were people in his ear yelling at him in the back, tell Rey to get back outside and show more concern for her. It's a television show. Go back and redo your scene, is basically what happened here. So this was very awkward. Eventually, Andrade did hit the Hammerlock DDT and got the win. And when the match was over, he ripped off Rey's mask. Rey covered up. Referees grabbed a towel, put the towel over his head. A really awkward finish to an otherwise good match. Jerry Lawler at one point referred to Zelina as Melina. If he calls her Katrina tomorrow night, he and I are going to have a problem. The Viking Raiders beat the Good Brothers and the Street Profits to retain their Raw Tag Team titles. This tag team division, oof. I mean, the match itself was good, it was fine, but the division badly needs a jolt right now. My goodness. We had Pastor Bill Belichick was back. Bill Belichick was back before his segment. They brought him back for another segment with Lana and Lashley. I guess the wedding was incomplete the week before, so they needed to bring him back to officially marry these two. And what happened is AJ Styles had a segment. As he's leaving, in the background, we see this man in a suit frantically roll under the bottom rope into the ring. Then the camera cuts and shows what's going on in the ring very briefly before they cut to the crowd, but they did show it. This person is immediately tackled by security. The announcers go silent. They don't acknowledge it. Then there was video from the building of what happened, and it seemed like what happened is nobody clued security in on who the guy was, that he was part of the show, and they tackled him, and they were trying to remove him from the building. A WWE staff member, this woman, you know, with a headset on, comes over and is telling them, no, leave him alone, he's part of the show. And then he was allowed to get back into the ring during the commercial, and then the segment happened after that when they came back from break. Pro Wrestling Sheet claims the whole thing was planned for some bizarre reason, and they did not tackle him for real, thinking that he was a fan. I have no idea what purpose this would serve, but apparently this was all a work. So he was there, as I said, to try to marry Lana and Lashley again. In the chaos of their wedding last week, they were never officially married, so they did a quick ceremony here, and now they are officially husband and wife. And then Rusev popped up on the Tron with some green screen tropical beach setting behind him, and a match was made. Tomorrow night on Raw, it will be Lashley one-on-one with Rusev, who is promising to unleash his old Bulgarian brute on Bobby Lashley. Lana will obviously be in her husband's corner, her husband now being Lashley, and Liv Morgan. The one Liv Morgan appearance, the one Liv Morgan follow-up we had on this show, she interrupted a R-Truth interview in the back to announce that she would be in Rusev's corner for that match tomorrow night. And I'm sure we will eventually get the inevitable mixed tag match, possibly at the Royal Rumble. It'll be Rusev and Lana, or Rusev and Liv. I'm getting my blondes mixed up. Rusev and Liv probably facing Lana and Lashley. I think it's just inevitable. Samoa Joe was teasing Kevin Owens and the rest of us throughout the entire night about a mystery man. He had got a partner. He was not going to tell Kevin Owens. He was not going to tell any of us who it was to tag with them in the main event to take on Seth Rollins and AOP. Seth Rollins is now calling himself the Monday Night Messiah, which I think is a pretty cool name. Now talk to me in 3 weeks when the announcers have beaten this name into the ground and I will hate it. So for these next 2 weeks, I like it. But I guarantee you, I will end up hating it because they will not shut up about it. So he is now the Monday Night Messiah. But the storyline was, who's the mystery man? Is it Aleister Black? Pretty obvious it wasn't Aleister Black, because Aleister Black had another segment later in the show, so it couldn't have been him. Is it a new person from NXT? Who is it? Who's the mystery man? It turns out the mystery man was The Big Show. Back on WWE television for the first time since November of 2018. So he has been gone for a while, which is good, because that stopped him from turning face to heel and heel to face and back to face again at least 4 times in that span of time. And if they were to use him as a special attraction every now and then, that's one thing, but they won't. He's already been announced for his second straight Monday Night Raw main event tomorrow night, tagging with Owens and Joe against Rollins and AOP again, this time in what they are calling the first ever fist fight match in WWE, whatever the hell that is. They have not bothered to explain the rules. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night. There is something amusing, though. You know, when I saw that the Big Show was the mystery man, and WWE tweeted about it, my only response was LOL. Because there's something amusing with the calendar turning to a new year, and on the very first Monday Night Raw of the new decade, the big mystery man they tease throughout the show ends up being the Big Show. And then a few days later, Diamond Dallas Page appears on Dynamite. This week we have Big Show wrestling on Monday. DDP is going to be wrestling on Wednesday at their Bash at the Beach show. And Scott Steiner just debuted on NWA Power last week, so we'll probably see him on the show this week too. What year am I living in? What year is it? So Big Show in this match, he tagged in. He was running wild. He had both members of AOP by the throat. Seth Rollins hit him in the back with a chair for the DQ. Another Seth Rollins match on this show ending in DQ. Rollins was setting up for a curb stomp. Owens grabbed him by the leg. That allowed Big Show to knock him out with his WMD punch. And AOP pulled Rollins out of the ring, and that's how the show ended. Now, Big Show told Sarah Schreiber backstage that he had 5 hip surgeries in the last 18 months. So, all joking aside, it's good to see him mobile. Just, you know, he's this giant person in his, what is he now, mid-40s, late-40s? Probably 45-ish or something. And has had his share of injuries, I'm sure. 5 hip surgeries in 18 months. The fact that this guy was even able to get back into the ring is a miracle. And he seems to be doing better. So I think that's great. But can we not overexpose this man like he was before, please? He should be used as a special attraction at this point in his career. You don't even know how much time he has left in his career. He could have 5 more years. He could have another year and a half. We don't know. I'm not against seeing him. But we don't need to see him as much as we saw him before. That's where you get into the whole idea of people just getting sick and tired and not wanting to see the Big Show or chanting, please retire. That's how bad it got at one point. They were chanting, please retire at him. Now, I know he was a heel at the time, but this was not heel heat. This was go away heat. But I think in small doses, he could be fine. But 2 straight weeks already of him being in the Raw main event, that's not a good sign. Now, SmackDown was from Evansville, Indiana. We had about 2,000 votes in our poll. 39% thumbs up, 61% thumbs down. They did forward some stories heading into the Royal Rumble, but just a very blasé show. Very just there. It existed. You missed nothing if you did not see this show. Also, all but one match on this show ended with some kind of a distraction finish or a disqualification finish. That was very impressive. Very impressive. They had a Miz TV segment with the returning John Morrison. John Morrison laced into the fans for being disrespectful to the Miz. That brought out New Day. We ended up with a Miz versus Kofi Kingston match. Big E was on commentary. Morrison was on commentary. And Miz at one point got in Big E's face. Morrison, he ran at the ring steps and did this wacky twirl and collided with Kofi Kingston. And that led to Miz hitting the skull-crushing finale in the ring for the win. So next week, it's going to be Miz and Morrison against... Actually, is it Miz and Morrison against Kofi and Big E? I thought now it was being advertised as Morrison and Big E. It might be a singles match with John Morrison against Big E. But clearly, it's leading to a tag team match. And I think that's great. I think Miz and Morrison against The New Day, you know, that could be a fun match. It could be a fun series of matches. Sonya Deville was in the back talking to Mandy Rose as Sonya was getting ready for Mandy's match. Mandy had a match with Alexa Bliss, and Mandy said, I have something I have to do first. I'll meet you out there. And what Mandy had to do was go find Otis, who was in the back with Tucky. He finds him, and she presents him with a box. She has her box, and she presents her box to him, and Otis is very excited, as anybody would be. And this is kind of a makeup for what Dolph Ziggler did to the cake that Otis's mom had baked for Mandy that he destroyed and he stepped on. And it was a cake. It looked like any cake you would buy from Walmart or something. And it had frosting on it and it read, I'm sorry. So Mandy goes out for this match with Alexa Bliss. It wasn't very good. And Otis and Tucker, in the middle of the match, walk out in the aisleway. Otis has the cake. He is eating the cake. He's grabbing gobs of cake with his hand. He's licking the frosting off of the cake. This distracted Alexa, disturbed her greatly, I'm sure. And Mandy rolled her up for the pin. So Mandy is finding this friendship mutually beneficial right now with Otis. I just hope she doesn't turn on the guy. I know she will. I know it's inevitable. That's what they do in WWE. WWE, this is how they portray things with the women. If you are a woman and you are showing affection for another man on the roster, especially somebody like Otis, who has no business being with somebody who looks like Mandy Rose, she will turn on you. She is a harlot. That's just how they're portrayed in this company. They're all vindictive. They're all opportunistic. I want to go to the people in the back who write this show, all the men, all the old white men in the back who write these shows, and I want to have a doll. I want to have Ramblin' Rabbit, and I want to look at them and go, show me on the doll where they hurt you. Because clearly they were damaged at some point early in their lives by girls at school, maybe. Maybe they were bullied. My God. So it was supposed to be Lacey Evans against Sasha Banks, but Bayley came up on the Tron. She said that Sasha was busy recording her new rap album out in L.A., and Lacey said that, I'm always ready for a fight, right here in the heartland of America. Cheap, you know, cheap pop. And the people cheered and they chanted USA. The crowd loved Liberty Bell here. I could not help but look at her here and just see Liberty Bell from GLOW. I was waiting for Zoya, the Destroyer, to come walk out. But they were into her. They were chanting USA. Of course they were into this woman. Her name is literally part of the name of the city that they were in. Anyone named Evans is going to be cheered in Evansville. That goes without saying. I mean, where do you think I would go if I ever wanted to train to be a wrestler? The Monster Factory. Of course. It only makes sense. So Lacey ended up running to the back. She found Bayley. They brawled. That was pretty much the extent of it. Daniel Bryan was in the back doing an interview when Ramblin' Rabbit appeared on the monitor and said that he knew a secret way to beat the Fiend, but before he could reveal that secret and share it, Bray put his hand over the hurt with the hurt glove over Ramblin' Rabbit's face, and well, you can imagine what happened next. Later in the show, Brian found a gift box sitting on a table in the back, and he looked inside the box, and inside the box, not Mandy's box, but inside the box was the mangled remains of Ramblin' Rabbit, nearly decapitated. We'll see where he respawns next. My guess is that the secret to beating the Fiend is either ripping his mask off or paying off the production people to turn that fucking red light off. That's what I'm hoping it is. I'm hoping because they're in a baseball stadium this year again for the Royal Rumble that we won't have to deal with the red light, but we probably will. Braun Strowman pinned the Intercontinental Champion Shinsuke Nakamura, which should earn him, in theory, a championship match, probably at the Royal Rumble. And he'll lose. He'll lose. This guy is allergic to gold. If he gets too close to it, he breaks out in hives. He briefly held the Intercontinental title up here on the show before Sami stole the belt out of his hand. Sami Zayn did this guy a favor. Otherwise, his throat would have started to close up, his eyes would have swelled shut. He would have had to grab an EpiPen and stick it in his leg. He is allergic to championships. So you watch, he'll get a title match. It'll be Nakamura defending against Braun Strowman, and he'll lose like he has lost all the other ones. Roman Reigns came out. He challenged Baron Corbin to a match at the Royal Rumble. Why do we need to have another fucking match between these two? Why can't you just put them in the Rumble match and just be done with it? We're getting another singles match between them before the Rumble match later on that same night, where I'm sure both of them will be, or at least Roman Reigns, I'm sure, will be part of the Rumble match, as he was years ago when he wrestled Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship and came out later that night and was in the Royal Rumble match. But this is the feud that simply will not end. And I said this, did I not say this after TLC? Some people anyway were thinking, oh, well, you know, they're going to blow it off at TLC. No, they're not. I said, watch. They're going to drag this out until the Royal Rumble, and that's exactly what they're doing. We still haven't gotten that the loser eats dog food. They're doing this match on all the house shows now. Don't be surprised if they're going to bring it on TV at some point. So we had the Usos, first match back on TV in months, against Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler. That was the main event. Jimmy hit a dive out over the top rope. Baron Corbin caught him, threw him into Roman Reigns, who was out there for the match. Reigns hit a spear on Corbin on the floor for the disqualification. So the Raw and SmackDown main events this week, both ending in DQ. So Roman is clearing the announce table off. All of a sudden, Bobby Roode. I don't call him Robert Roode. He's always Bobby Roode to me. Bobby Roode reemerges. He is back. His suspension is over, his wellness suspension. He is back. And the heels beat down Roman Reigns. They beat down the Usos. Roode gives Reigns a spinebuster on top of the table, which did not break. So Dolph Ziggler, ever the quick thinker, stands up on the table, does a jumping elbow drop, and the table finally breaks. And they buried Reigns under the table debris and a whole pile of chairs to end the show. It's good to see Bobby Roode not be buried in a different kind of way. Roman was literally buried here in the segment, but it's nice to see that Roode is not being buried after his wellness violation. He was back here in a prime spot. But I feel like I've been watching this show on rewind for about 3 months now. This needs to end. This needs to end very soon. They need to move on from this. And I suppose if Roman, who's one of the favorites going into this men's Royal Rumble match, that if he wins, that will be the end of this. So it's just a way to get to the Rumble. Let's get to the Rumble. It's kill time. They're in kill time mode right now. Corbin can be a great heel. He clearly is hated. You know, my issue is just how long this is dragged out for. I personally don't find any of the stuff that he's been doing interesting or appealing in any way that motivates me to want to watch the show, which I think should be the goal, right? Either the babyface is so strong that you just tune in to watch what they're going to do no matter what. From 1 week to the next, it's unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to do, or maybe it is predictable, but they just, you know, they go out there and have great matches, whatever it is. Either the babyface is somebody you just want to see no matter what, or the heel is so hated in the right way that you tune in to see them get their butt kicked by whoever it's going to be. I don't have that kind of feeling or emotion when I watch this show. I don't care. I'm shocked by how little they have worked, in my opinion, to get people to care about this show on Fox. I thought if anything, they'd focus on the Fox show and Raw would kind of get the shaft. And I'm shocked. I'm shocked by how little they've done to make people care about this show. And the ratings go up, the ratings go down. This week they were up to 2.5 million viewers. Great. Doesn't change my opinion of the show. And Mandy and Otis is still the best thing going story-wise in this company. Okay, we know that a VPN helps protect your privacy and security online, but what I did not know until recently is that you can use a VPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. So I wanted to see for myself and test things out. I saw a lot of people freaking out 2 weeks ago about Friends being taken off Netflix in the U.S. As of January 1st, you can no longer stream the show on Netflix here in the U.S. Unless, of course, you live across the pond and use Netflix UK. Or so I read. So I fired up my ExpressVPN app. I changed my location to the UK. I refreshed Netflix in my browser. And voila! There it was. All 10 seasons of Friends at my fingertips. How about the movie Friday? With Ice Cube and Chris Tucker and Zeus! Debo! It used to be on Netflix here, but not anymore. So, in ExpressVPN, I switched my location to Germany. I refreshed Netflix, and there it was. And now, every day is Friday. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want websites to think that you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries, so think of all the Netflix libraries alone that you could go through. But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service, be it Hulu, BBC, iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. ExpressVPN is fast and reliable, there's no lag or buffering, and you can stream in HD without any issues. ExpressVPN is also compatible with all of your devices, phones, smart TVs, and more, so you can watch what you want, when you want, wherever you may be. If you sign up right now at expressvpn.com/solomonster, you can get an extra 3 months of the service for free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Support the podcast and watch what you want. It's time for predictions, where I not only give my pro wrestling predictions for the new year, but I take a look back at my predictions for last year. And I've had some good years. Unfortunately, this was not one of them. Here are my predictions for 2019. These were from Sound Off episode 580 last year. So I'm going to run through what they were. I predicted that EC3 would debut on Monday Night Raw and interrupt John Cena in the middle of the ring the way that Chris Jericho debuted when he interrupted The Rock on Raw back in the day. Boy, was I wrong about that. It makes me really sad, though, when I see what they've done with him or not done with him, and I think back to that idea. I don't think you could have gone as far opposite what they did as compared to the idea that I pitched for this guy last year. That's how much I thought he could have been something. Maybe even not like a top main eventer in the company. I'm not even saying that, but just the one thing he really had going for him more than even his in-ring ability, which is okay. It's not like he's a great wrestler, but it's his speaking ability. So to see him verbally jousting with John Cena would have established credibility for him, I think, on night one, and then they could have done, you know, something with him, and they did nothing, and it's all very depressing. I predicted Chris Jericho would challenge Hiroshi Tanahashi for the IWGP heavyweight title at Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania weekend, on that ROH New Japan G1 supercard, and lose. Jericho was not even on the MSG show, and instead he beat Tanahashi last weekend at Wrestle Kingdom, so I was wrong. I was going to say I'm kind of right, he had the match with Tanahashi, but I was way off. It was in another country. And Jericho had a different championship, although that was not on the line, so screwed the pooch on that one. I predicted Switchblade Jay White would become the IWGP champion before the year was over, and I was right. It was only 5 weeks later that he won the title from Tanahashi. I predicted Kenny Omega would strike a deal to wrestle for both All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I was right. He turned down an offer from WWE to sign a 4-year deal with AEW that, according to he himself, allows him to work dates, if he so chooses, for New Japan. And, of course, they have to want him to wrestle, and they obviously do not want him to wrestle because they have not made a deal yet. But it is in his contract that if he wants to make a deal to wrestle in New Japan, he can do so. Thus far, that just has not happened. But here's an interesting question that I pose to all of you. Do you think that Kenny Omega made the right decision? Or should he have taken the money from WWE? He said he always wanted a WrestleMania match with AJ Styles, and that may never happen now. You know, 4 years is a long time, never say never, but it may never happen now. Especially AJ. I mean, by then AJ would, I mean, how old would AJ be? 44, probably? I don't know that AJ wants to keep going for that long. Yeah? And Omega definitely feels like less of a star now than he did a year ago. There's no doubt about that. To me, anyway. No doubt. No doubt. Absolutely feels like less of a star now than he did a year ago. But did he make the right choice? I still say he did. In spite of that, I still think he made the right decision. But what do you guys think? I predicted that CM Punk would wrestle a match for AEW, and that match would be against Kenny Omega. And not only did he not sign with AEW, he did not wrestle anywhere at all, and instead now he's tweeting insults at The Miz. I predicted AEW would be unable to secure a big TV deal and would have to settle for a smaller station or stream online and build around 2 to 3 big shows per year, with the Double or Nothing show likely not taking place until later in the spring. Well, I got that right, at least. But they ended up with 2 hours of live television on TNT, so I would call that more than just a small station, so I got that wrong. I predicted that the whole McMahon's takeover Raw and SmackDown angle from the end of last year would end up putting Vince McMahon and Triple H in storyline on a collision course, with Shane supporting his father and Stephanie supporting her husband. That turned out to be wishful thinking. Instead, we got Shane McMahon as the best in the world for a year. But the idea that I pitched would have had AJ Styles beating Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble to regain the WWE Championship, and Seth Rollins winning the Royal Rumble match, but instead of fighting for the Universal title, he would challenge AJ Styles for the WWE title, and he would win. So Triple H's guy would get the win. And with Rollins being on the SmackDown roster after WrestleMania, AJ would then move to Monday Night Raw. I thought it would be a lateral move for the two shows, kind of like an even swap. If you have Styles go here, Rollins go there. So this did not happen. I mean, AJ did move to Raw, but this culmination of the McMahon storyline really didn't go anywhere. It was kind of a waste. I predicted that Braun Strowman would beat Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble to finally capture the Universal Championship. Well, who looks like the fool now, huh? Who looks like the fool? Because, and here was my rationale for it. This was my rationale last year when I pitched this and I predicted this. My rationale was, if at first, second, third, fourth, and fifth you don't succeed, then why not try again? And then Drew McIntyre would go on to win the Raw Elimination Chamber match and beat Strowman to win the championship at WrestleMania. So that was a miss. Strowman was in a battle royal with the SNL guys at WrestleMania, and McIntyre lost to Roman Reigns. I correctly predicted, as I'm sure everybody else did, that Becky Lynch would win the Women's Royal Rumble match and go on to challenge Ronda Rousey for the Raw Women's Championship at WrestleMania. They added Charlotte and the SmackDown title to the match. But it was technically still Becky versus Ronda for the title, so this was a win for me. I predicted John Cena would get his rematch with The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and this time he would come out the winner. Undertaker ended up not wrestling at all, and Thugonomics John Cena made a cameo and did not wrestle a match. I predicted that Andrade Cien Almas would win the United States Championship from Rusev and defend the title against Rey Mysterio at WrestleMania. I was wrong, but maybe only by a year, because it looks like Andrade could very well be defending the United States Championship at this year's WrestleMania. Maybe they build to a mask versus hair match with him and Mysterio or something like that. I predicted that WWE would bring Hulk Hogan back to host WrestleMania. Alexa Bliss was technically the host, but she brought out Hogan at the beginning of the show, who basically kind of served like a co-host. So I'm taking the win on this one. I don't care what anybody says. That was a win. I predicted that with Vince McMahon's time being taken up more and more by the impending return of the XFL, which, by the way, we're only a few weeks away from the debut of the XFL. I will at least be watching the very first game. I can't say that I'll be watching every week, but I have to see what this looks like. But with his time being taken up more and more by the XFL, I predicted that Triple H would finally take over the creative reins from his father-in-law for SmackDown Live when it moved to Fox, and that Shawn Michaels and Gabe Sapolsky would both gain more influence in NXT, and as a result of Triple H devoting more of his time to SmackDown, they would kind of fill the gap and take over. No pun intended, as far as NXT is concerned. Now, Shawn Michaels has gained more influence over NXT as Triple H has gotten busier this past year. Triple H, just in an interview, said that Shawn basically now runs the NXT UK brand. He flies out there every few weeks, and he's basically running that brand. But I also predicted that Monday Night Raw would put on some strong shows heading into WrestleMania, and then would fall right back into the doldrums, and the lows would keep getting even lower, and they did. Last month, there were a few Raw shows that set all-time low ratings records. I also said by Christmas, the holiday shows would bottom out at about 1.5 million viewers. Wasn't quite that low, but they did bottom out around 1.8 million or so. They definitely dropped under 2 million. I predicted that Brock Lesnar would be drafted to SmackDown in time for the big move to Fox, and for the first time since 2004, Lesnar would wrestle a match on SmackDown, probably the premiere episode. And I was right. I was right on the money there. I just didn't know that the match would last 8 seconds, or that it would be for sure against Kofi Kingston. But it seemed like if I were WWE and I wanted to go all out for my big debut on Fox, and if the network wanted Brock Lesnar, then why not have him wrestle on the show? Because that's the one thing he has not done since he came back in 2012. So you want something big to promote on that first SmackDown? Put Brock Lesnar in a match. And that's what they did. I predicted that Ronda Rousey would be drafted to SmackDown before the move to Fox, which she was not. I predicted The Rock would be the headline attraction for the WWE Hall of Fame, which he was not, and that Chyna will finally be inducted, which she was, as part of D-Generation X, so I got that half right. I predicted that Adam Cole would win the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, which he did not, and that Shayna Baszler, if WWE decided not to do a Queen of the Ring tournament, which was sort of being bandied about at the time, then instead she would win the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And she did not. Although, she did get a win in the main event at Survivor Series. So they did put NXT over, just not the way that I thought they would. I predicted that we would finally see Horsewomen versus Horsewomen at Survivor Series with Charlotte, Becky, Sasha, and Bayley against Ronda, Shayna, Marina, and Jessamyn Duke. We did not. Ronda took the rest of the year off, and watching more of Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke in the months since then, they are nowhere near ready to be on Raw or SmackDown, so I'm glad it didn't happen. And I still don't think, it may never happen at this point, but if it ever does, I still think we're a ways off. Because I just remember reading reports of, they were so impressed, WWE and NXT officials were so impressed with the progress of Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke. And look, as two women who probably just got a crash course, never did professional wrestling before, maybe they picked up on some of the basics quickly, but just having watched pretty much every match they've been in, I have not been impressed. I certainly have not been impressed enough to think that they should be on Raw or SmackDown. So I'm happy that didn't happen. And lastly, I predicted that Matt Riddle would debut on Monday Night Raw the night after WrestleMania to begin his quest, as he has talked about for years, to be the man to retire Brock Lesnar. Although, he would not be successful. That did not happen. Although, if there is any justice in the wrestling world, he will at least mix it up with Brock in the Royal Rumble match in a few weeks. But there was a guy on Twitter going by the name Manju, M-A-N-J-O-O. Okay, Manju. Remember Manju? Remember me mentioning him? Manju called me out for saying that Matt Riddle would end up being a bigger star than Lars Sullivan and EC3. That's a comment that I made. That's the biggest joke I ever heard, he said. He said when he first looked at Riddle, he thought, who is this jobber guy? And I said to him, I said, bookmark that tweet, and let's come back to it in the future, and we'll see if you still find it funny. Hey, Manju, what do you have to say now, huh? EC3 is basically Dwayne Gill with abs and a nice tan. And Lars Sullivan is at home Googling instructions on how to launch a denial of service attack and take down Pornhub. That prediction's looking a lot better than it did a year ago, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Riddle's not quite there yet. But I like his chances right now a lot more than I do those other two. Manju. So not a great year for predictions, but I got a few right. Not to beat myself up too much, but we can do better. So let's try with my pro wrestling predictions for 2020 as we gaze into the future. With Brock Lesnar being in the Royal Rumble match this year, it opens up a whole range of possibilities as far as who might eliminate him or who he'll face at WrestleMania. They're probably one and the same, whoever it ends up being. It could very well be Cain Velasquez, and I would hate to see it. I'd love to see it be, as I said earlier, a star from NXT, or maybe like Drew McIntyre. I think it's his time. It's sink or swim. It's sink or swim. I don't think he wins the Rumble, but I do think, and this is my prediction here, that Drew McIntyre will win the Elimination Chamber match for the right to see who gets to wrestle Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and he will win the WWE Championship from Lesnar in Tampa. I predict that it will be Roman Reigns winning the Men's Royal Rumble match this year to earn a shot at The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, and his Universal title at WrestleMania. They have held Roman out of the title picture ever since he came back last year. They have kept him out. I don't want to say they've kept him on ice, but he really has been downplayed a lot more than even I thought he would be. I don't see that lasting much longer. You know they still want to build around him as their star on that SmackDown brand. I don't think Daniel Bryan's going to get the job done at the Royal Rumble when it comes to winning the championship. So I think Roman is going to win the Rumble. I think he's going to be the man that they put up against The Fiend. He's the guy that is going to somehow find a way to beat him and to win the championship. But that will be your Royal Rumble winner and championship match at WrestleMania, is my prediction. I predict that Ronda Rousey will return to win the Women's Royal Rumble match and go on to challenge Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's Championship one-on-one, the way it should have been this past year, at WrestleMania. And she will lose. And the next night on Raw is when Shayna Baszler attacks and starts a new program with Becky, and it's Shayna who goes on to end the year-plus reign of Becky Lynch. I predict that Edge will be a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble match. There's been a lot of speculation about Edge. Will he? Won't he? He denies it, but then a new report comes out saying he just signed a fat new contract and it's a big enough deal that it would seem to be for more than just kind of keeping him under contract to keep him away from other companies or doing a podcast or something like that. So what's going on with Edge? Well, I think we're going to see him in the Royal Rumble. I don't see it as being a full-fledged return. I'm not even convinced he'll have a match at WrestleMania. But to come in and do some spots in the Rumble match, I think he can do it. And I think we see that at Minute Maid Park. 2 years ago, John Cena was asked, he was at a Comic-Con or something, some kind of event. And he was asked who among the crop of top NXT talent would he most like to see step into the ring with him in the future. And the choices he was given were Adam Cole, Ricochet, and the Velveteen Dream. And he chose Velveteen Dream. He had high praise for Dream. He said that he had a feeling about him and that he would like to have a match with him one day. Now, I think that day is April 5th at WrestleMania 36. I think John Cena will wrestle the Velveteen Dream. And it sucks that Dream hurt his back and he missed out on all that build to Survivor Series, of which I'm sure he would have been a big part. You know, as strong as NXT ended up getting put over there, I think he would have ended up being a big part of that. Now, maybe it would have been at the expense of a Damian Priest or somebody, but he was hurt, and he wasn't able to be part of all that. He should have been. This would be as big of a way, I think, to make up for that as you could possibly come up with. It could be huge for his career. Now, I also have flashbacks to Bray Wyatt losing to John Cena at WrestleMania 30, but I think it would be different this time. Cena's just in a different place in his life. He's in a different place of his career. His career is winding down. You know? I thought about the idea of John Cena entering the Royal Rumble as he did in 2008 as a surprise and then building to him and Brock Lesnar. One last time at WrestleMania, the whole story about Cena trying to nail down title number 17 to break Ric Flair's fake record. But I just don't see them doing it yet. I'm not even convinced that Cena will have the time that they would need to really promote a championship match around him. You know, I don't see it. But to put over a new guy who he's on record as saying could be the guy at some point seems more realistic to me. I predict that CM Punk, despite some people still believing that he will or come back, or that his beef with Seth Rollins is all a work, that he will not wrestle at WrestleMania this year. I mean, it's ridiculous I even have to say this. It seems kind of obvious, but there are people who have convinced themselves that it's all a work. And whether it's Miz or whether it's Rollins, this is all happening for a reason. He will not wrestle, not only at WrestleMania, but I predict he will not wrestle for WWE at all in 2020. His deal is with Fox. It's not with WWE. When his deal with Fox is up, he will not be back. But he will wrestle again, somewhere at some point. And it may well be WWE, it just won't be this year. I predict that The Undertaker will wrestle his final match at the Survivor Series. 30 years after debuting on that very same event in 1990, 30 years of The Undertaker is going to be the promotion around this event. It's where he was born. It's where he will go to die, in a matter of speaking. And he will then headline the Hall of Fame class in 2021 as part of WrestleMania 37 weekend. I predict that WWE will host its second all-women's pay-per-view event this year, but it will not be Evolution 2. Instead, it will be the first ever Queen of the Ring event, with a tournament that climaxes at the pay-per-view. I predicted Jon Moxley will win the AEW championship from Chris Jericho at their Revolution pay-per-view next month, and then drop it to Kenny Omega at their All Out event at the end of the summer. I predict that Matt Hardy will leave WWE for AEW. All signs seem to point to him leaving and going somewhere, although nothing is for sure. But I do think he will leave WWE to go to AEW when his contract expires in March. And remember, if you let your contract expire, there's no non-compete. You don't have to wait 90 days like Luke Harper, for example, is in the middle of doing right now, and most people would have to do if they let you go. If he just quietly lets his contract run out, that's it. He could show up the next day, wherever he wants. He's certainly been teasing a lot on social media about leaving. You know, the reports are that it's not about money. He's been negotiating with WWE. Money is not the issue. It's more creative control. And what are you going to do with me? What are your plans for me going forward? The reality is this. I kind of understand both sides of the coin here. On the one hand, Matt Hardy is a lot older. He's got a lot of mileage on his body. He can barely walk straight. It's almost painful to watch him walk to the ring. You know, he's not a spring chicken anymore. He's had a lot of injuries. And so I can understand WWE saying, listen, we're not going to put you in like a main event prime position here. We have a lot of other guys on the roster. We have more talent than we've ever had before. We have more talent than we know what to do with. We have people chomping at the bit down in Florida waiting to come up. We're not going to guarantee you some big, massive push at this point in your career. And again, I don't think they've ever looked at Matt. They've never respected him the way that they have Jeff Hardy. And no matter how many times Jeff Hardy would get into trouble or get suspended or would go away for a while, they were always more likely to do something like that with him because they saw Jeff Hardy as the star, not Matt Hardy. I don't think much has changed in that way. But I can also understand Matt's perspective. It's not as though this company ever did much with that whole woken or broken persona. They had the Halloween special on the network that was very entertaining. But character-wise on TV, they never ran with it. And I still think it had mileage. I think it could have gotten over in front of the WWE audience the way that it did the Impact audience and all the independent shows. And, you know, it was creative enough where had you given him more creative leeway or input into the character and skits and stuff on TV, which I was hoping they would do, I think it could have worked. They never gave him a chance. And he recognizes this next contract he signs is probably going to be the last contract he ever signs. Especially if it's like a 3 or 4. I mean, WWE's been signing people to 5-year deals. So this next contract is going to be it for him. And he recognizes that. So he wants to make sure if this is the last run that he's going to have, that he makes the most of it. And if WWE can't give him certain assurances of that, then you know what he should do? He should walk. He should walk away and go somewhere else where he'll be appreciated and maybe he will have the creative input that he craves more than money. So I think he's as good as gone. And I think he will be revealed as, you know, as broken Matt Hardy to be the exalted one leading the Dark Order in AEW. Because if they insist on pushing the Dark Order as a top faction, which clearly they do, they need somebody with a name to lead them. It can't be some unknown. I thought about Christopher Daniels. Him turning them down last week may have just been something to throw us off the scent. I just think that would be kind of a letdown. I get the whole like, oh, you know, Daniels was once considered to be the higher power in WWE and it never happened. And here we are now 20 years later or whatever, and he'll be the higher power for the Dark Order. But, you know, Daniels, is he really the answer? I don't think that's a good choice. Now, Matt Hardy, they're probably the same age. I mean, I don't know who's older than the other. Actually, I think Daniels might be older. So it's not like Matt Hardy is some young up-and-comer, but I think as broken Matt, I mean, the potential there, the entertainment value there, you know, with all of his minions and the skits they could shoot and everything is just, I don't know. It's too good. It'd be too good to reject if that was the idea that was on the table. I predict that Marty Scurll will not be revealed as the exalted one and will not sign with AEW. And instead, he will sign a new deal to stay with Ring of Honor while still being allowed to work with the NWA and make appearances on Power. And in fact, we just saw Nick Aldis. I was going to talk about this in the Power review, but I'll mention it now. Nick Aldis made a surprise appearance last night at the Ring of Honor show at Center Stage in Atlanta. He appeared in disguise as a police officer after the main event was over, and he went after Flip Gordon. I guess Flip Gordon had ran down to make the save. This was after the match between PCO and Roosh, where PCO won by DQ. And so he attacked Flip Gordon. I think Marty Scurll came out to chase him off. They're building to an NWA championship match, possibly at the NWA pay-per-view on the 24th between Aldis and Scurll. So now, all of a sudden, NWA had previously had a working relationship with Ring of Honor, and then it stopped, and it seems like they may be working together again. And they are furthering the story between Aldis and Scurll. And I think, you know, if Marty stays with ROH, and I think he will, I'm sure that as part of his deal, there may be certain provisions that allow him to work for other promotions. Not a WWE or an AEW, obviously, but NWA being one of them. So I think that's what ends up happening. I predict that the revival, for all of the stories about them holding out as they have so far, in the face of these very lucrative offers. We keep hearing about these lucrative offers being made to Dash and Dawson to stay in WWE. Over, you know, they're being offered well over $500,000, reduced dates so they don't have to work as heavy a schedule. I don't know about Wilder, but I know, you know, Dawson has at least one kid, and so, you know, you think of family and less time on the road and more time with my family, and I'm making as much money as I've ever made in my life. It's a hard proposition to turn down. You know, the latest scuttlebutt is that they want certain assurances that they're going to focus on the tag team division. They are a tag team, right? I think they both recognize that Scott Dawson is not going to go on to have some great singles career. Dash Wilder probably won't either, although I think there's less of a chance for Dawson. So yeah, of course, they want a strong tag team division because that's where they're going to be there for years if they re-sign. If I'm Dash and Dawson, and that's what I'm asking for, I don't trust the word that WWE says. They'll be like, oh yeah, sure, we're going to focus on the tag team division. And then what happens 3 months later when the tag team division sucks again? Now you're stuck in this long-term contract. So that's kind of where, as far as the rumors, that's where things seem to stand. But the belief amongst most people is that they're out. They're going to leave, they're going to go to AEW, they're going to work against the Young Bucks. I predict that will not happen. I predict the revival are going to stay. They are going to be convinced at the 11th hour when it comes right down to it. The offer, the money, it's just going to be too much for them to reject. And I predict the revival will re-sign with WWE just like Anderson and Gallows did last year. Meanwhile, Brody Lee, the former Luke Harper, I predict will sign with AEW once his non-compete expires at the beginning of March. Not a huge leap there, although he could wind up in New Japan. I think it's one or the other. You know, and he also has at least one kid. He's got a family. Does he want to travel or relocate to Japan? I don't know. I don't know where his head is at. I don't know on a personal level whether or not that's something he'd be interested in. And Cody, I know, has had publicly some very kind comments to say about Harper before. He's talked openly about him. I think it's clear they would have interest in him once he officially becomes available. And if they were to talk to him, I would be surprised if he turned them down. So I think that that is his likely destination. We'll see him in AEW in the not too distant future. I predict Undisputed Era will finally leave NXT for Raw or SmackDown this year. I predict Bianca Belair will be the women's champion in 2020, but not in NXT. It'll be on Raw or SmackDown. And that is kind of, in a way, going out on a limb. I mean, they are stockpiled right now with talent in that women's division in NXT. Bianca's only one part of it. I think she's going to be the one, though, before any of them, to make the move over to either Mondays or Fridays, and she will have a championship on that show before this year is over. I predict Austin Theory will be the NXT North American champion by the end of the summer. I predict the demise of 205 Live, which has been on death's door, it seems, for a while now. They have weeks sometimes where they just outright cancel the show, sometimes without even letting the talent know. Leo Rush, you know, went off on them for that before. I think 205 Live comes to an end, and much of the talent there will simply be absorbed into NXT, which is where the Cruiserweight Championship is now anyway, so... You know, again, one foot out the door, it seems like. You know, the title is basically an NXT title now. I think it's just a matter of time. With WWE very likely rolling out its new tiered system for the network this year, we may finally have access to Progress and ICW programming on one of the premium tiers. And I predict that before the year is over, NWA Power will be airing on the WWE Network. Now, I actually hope I'm wrong about that. Again, this is not my hopes and dreams for 2020. I'm trying to make predictions here. So even the ones that some cases seem obvious, it's what I think is going to happen. I'm trying to predict the future here. I hope I'm wrong about this one. But they've acknowledged themselves. You know, I've heard Lagana, for example, give interviews before, and they acknowledge they don't have unlimited financial resources to run without a television deal or something to sustain them in the long run. I think what they're doing now is great. I'm a fan of the show. I tune in every week to every episode of Power in that studio. It's a nice throwback, but they have a nice collection of talent. They have to build on it as the year goes on. So I'm a fan of what they're doing. And I would hate to see them mess with the formula in any way. YouTube is the easiest thing in the world. Everybody has access to YouTube. So you just go on YouTube and you can watch the full show. You don't have to pay for anything. It's great. But that can't go on forever. So at some point, something's got to give. Now, any kind of deal they make would have to make sense for them. I don't know how much they're making off their AdSense on YouTube. But if they were to lose that, then WWE would have to pay them for it. They'd have to, again, make it worth their while to form some kind of a partnership here. And so they're in content acquisition mode right now. I feel like WWE is always, they're never not in content acquisition mode for the network. So I would not be so quick to shut this door on this possibility here, that we will see Power on the network before this year is out. With MLW preparing to make some kind of a transformative announcement. That's what they're claiming. That's the word being thrown around. Transformative about its future. Wrestling Inc. had a report on its website this week claiming interest from Showtime in possibly working with MLW or airing an MLW show, but nothing is official. I predict MLW does land on a bigger network in 2020. I have no idea if it's Showtime or some other place, but a name network somewhere on cable, and their first big signing of the new year will be Killer Cross. Not just for that one Fightland show they have him doing next month, which he's already booked for. MLW, they recently signed Jacob Fatu to a new multi-year contract. He would have been highly sought after had he become a free agent. And they locked him up for the next few years. And apparently they will retain control now of all of his outside bookings. So he can be booked out to various independent promotions. MLW will have control over that. So he can almost be like a traveling champion for them. But he's a star of the future. He's a star now, but he's a star of the future. And I was impressed. I was surprised and impressed when I heard that he had re-signed for multiple years and they locked him up. And that tells me that MLW is being aggressive going forward as far as building their brand, locking in their key names. And now, whatever this announcement is going to be, any week now apparently, I have to assume it has to do with television unless they're being acquired by some kind of bigger company. That can mean even bigger things or even bigger resources for them going forward. I think they will do the same thing with Killer Cross, who will also end up working dates this year in New Japan, I predict. But that would give MLW a core of Jacob Fatu, Killer Cross, and I guess the other big star they have would be Filthy Tom Lawler as their three key stars going forward, and that's a strong core to build around. And finally here, I predict that Sanada will win the New Japan Cup, but then fall short of winning the IWGP Championship, but he will end up winning the Intercontinental title at some point this year. I predict Kota Ibushi will win the IWGP title from Tetsuya Naito later this year as well. And the finals of the G1 Climax this fall will be Okada against Will Ospreay, with Okada winning his third G1 and going on to challenge Kota Ibushi for the IWGP title in a bit of role reversal from night one of this year's Wrestle Kingdom. But this time, next year, Okada loses and Ibushi retains at Wrestle Kingdom 15. So those are my predictions for 2020. I hopefully will have a better score when we look back on this a year from now than I did this year. Again, I got a few right, but not a great year in terms of predictions, so hopefully we'll be able to turn it around with this batch going forward. And be sure to let me know some of your predictions. You know, you have 3 to 5 key predictions in wrestling, not just WWE, that you see going forward here in 2020. You can chime in and let me know what your predictions are. AEW scored a dominant win over NXT in the Nielsen numbers this week by a healthy margin, even though they were down slightly from the week before. The live airing on Wednesday saw AEW get 947,000 viewers, good for 6th on cable, while NXT scored 721,000, way up from what they did the week before for what was an award show. It wasn't really a first-run show, but they did not crack the top 50. On cable this week, NXT came in at number 55. That's in a week where I thought NXT was the superior show. I liked NXT more. I thought it was a better show overall. Variety had a story this week on the DVR viewership for both shows. When DVR plus 7 viewership is added in, that is including the people who watch the show within a week, within 7 days of it airing, AEW is averaging 1.2 million viewers per week, which raises it up, the DVR viewership raises the average up by over 30%. NXT is averaging 972,000 viewers per week, so the DVR factored in raises it about 20%. It's still better for them ad-wise when people watch live. You really want people, I think, to watch these shows live. But for the people wondering if AEW will ever break a million viewers ever again, they do most weeks, just not live. And for the people wondering, what is the future of AEW? Are they going to, is TNT going to get rid of them? And then they're going to have to scramble and get more TV. I would be stunned if TNT did not want to extend its deal with AEW. And this, I look at this as kind of a trial run, because I'm not really sure how much money AEW is even making off, ad money and that kind of stuff. I would almost look at this run they're on right now as a trial run. And in a few months, we may hear about some kind of a renewal or a new deal being signed with TNT that is even more advantageous to them because they had to prove themselves. They were an unproven brand coming into this. And if they're bringing in over a million viewers a week and almost a million live to TNT as compared to whatever TNT was airing previously, that's pretty damn good. So I don't think they're in jeopardy of losing their television with TNT at all. So hopefully we can just dispel that rumor altogether. There was also a story about WWE making $13 million last year in Google AdSense money off of their YouTube videos, which is a nice chunk of change. I mean, that's $13 million. I don't make quite that much off of my channel. So it shows you why YouTube is so important to them. But if anything, I look at it a little bit differently because I saw some people saying, you see, this is why YouTube is so important. I look at it a little bit differently and I think yes, YouTube is important, but it shows you why television and their TV ratings are so much more important. Which is why I laugh whenever these bums are like, ratings don't matter. These are just brain dead fools who don't know what they're talking about. I'd have more respect for them if they said ratings don't quite mean what they used to mean and here's why. But to just make a blanket statement and say ratings don't matter, you're a fool. You're a fool. But here's the thing that I don't see people really mentioning about this is, okay, so let's say they made $13 million last year off of their YouTube videos. And this is not an official statement or anything that was put out. This is someone online who had access to some kind of social media online, and it really, I think, is more of a guesstimate than anything else, that this is how much WWE probably made last year off of Google AdSense. Okay, $13 million. Would you rather make $65 million off of YouTube over a 5-year period? Or would you rather make $1 billion over 5 years from Fox? That is the power that television still holds. No matter how many times we hear about people cutting the cord, and yes, you have social media, and you have so many ways digitally now, and on DVR, and you can get the shows in so many different ways than you could have during the Monday Night War era and all that. That's all true. And there are people who are cutting the cord. I heard from a lot of people. I inquired recently about YouTube TV. I had a friend tell me, oh, you got to get it. I haven't had a cable box in a year. I do nothing but YouTube TV and it's great. And I said, all right, well, let me do a trial of the service. And it was impressive. There was never any lag or anything like that. And they had a good selection of channels, but I, you know, look, there's channels that I do sometimes watch that I have offered to me on my cable provider that are not available on YouTube TV. Now, the thing is, I don't watch enough TV to justify spending all this extra money on cable just for fucking Buzzer Channel with game shows that are 40 years old. But I'm still very hesitant. I was impressed, but not so impressed that I pulled the trigger myself. But a lot of people are doing it. So that is a real thing that is happening. But at the end of the day, and it's going to be a while before this changes, but there is a premium that is being paid for live television and live sports and things of that nature. And WWE made a deal with a television partner that is going to net them or be worth $1 billion over 5 years. They are not going to make $1 billion off of YouTube. And that is the biggest difference. And why people need to stop putting television down, you know, or the ratings too. Because look, the ratings could drop enough, even in the demos, where at some point in the future, it may make Fox or NBC Universal go, hey, this is troublesome. Now, that hasn't happened yet. And in fact, NBC was crowing the other day about them being number one, and WWE had a lot to do with it, and the 18 to 49 demo and all this stuff. So they're still doing very well. But again, this opinion that ratings don't matter and this doesn't matter, it's that level of ignorance and naivete is just disgusting to me when I hear people say stupid shit like that. But I would much rather have $1 billion over 5 years than I would $13 million off YouTube. Me personally, I'll take the $13 million. I mean, I could live comfortably on that. That'd be fine with me. But I think people just need to keep these things in perspective. Anyway, Tony Khan, enough WWE. Tony Khan, he thanked the fans for making the show a rating success this week. He said, for all of us to keep succeeding, AEW will listen to our fans. I hear your feedback, and I will not ignore what you want to see from AEW every week. That's very nice of him to say. I hope that's true. And it's nice to see him engaged like that, the way that he is. But after this week, I hope he hears from some of the fans who have been giving him feedback about this Nightmare Collective bullshit. You know, I know he is intimately involved in a lot of the creative stuff behind the scenes. PW Insider had a report saying that, you know, the will he or won't he angle with Moxley, you know, joining the inner circle, that was a Tony Khan idea. And he's been involved in trying to make stars out of Jungle Boy and Scorpio Sky. He's been the one behind that effort. But this week's show was not their strongest effort. I thought Dynamite was a decent show. The wrestling largely was solid, but they really wasted that women's championship match between Riho and Chris Statlander to advance this Nightmare Collective nonsense with Brandi Rhodes that I just cannot bring myself to care about. It's just not good TV. Now, Brandi is a beautiful woman, no doubt. I don't have a problem with her being on screen. Okay, she's very easy on the eyes, and she's actually a good talker. So whether it's when she was with Cody and she would be cutting some of the promos sometimes or talking about a big match he had coming up or something else entirely, she, I think, can have a role on the show without this being the idea. But I think that there's definitely room for her to be on the show. And the thing about Brandi is not only she's, you know, a pretty woman, but she had this story that they told us about last year. The wanting to be an ice skater when she was a kid and then her dreams were shattered. Remember that video package from last year? She had this great sympathetic babyface story. And then they just turned her heel. One day she started the Nightmare Collective. Out of nowhere, poof, just like that, all of a sudden the Nightmare Collective. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And that segment this week on the show was awful. I didn't care much for the Dark Order stuff either with Chris Daniels, but I did enjoy, you know, the MJF segment with DDP, the closing segment with Moxley swerving Jericho into thinking that he was joining the inner circle only for him to smash a bottle of the bubbly over his head and steal the keys to the 4GT that Jericho offered him. Apparently that 4GT that we saw on TV a few weeks ago, that belongs to Tony Khan's father. Tony Khan's father could probably afford about 5 or 10 Well, who am I kidding? He can afford a lot more than that of those four GTs. I guess when you're worth over $8 billion, as Shad Khan is, you can afford to drive a car worth over 600 grand. To him, that's nothing. That's chump change. But go back and watch my live stream from Wednesday if you missed it. I actually think that was the best batch of phone calls that I have had yet on these streams. Some really good ones in there, including a live report from Andrew. Aim for the head, Andrew Jorlog. Shout out to him. He was in attendance at the show. Ironically, one of the callers brought up the Elite, and I was talking during the phone call portion about how Kenny Omega feels like a lot less of a star now than he did a year ago before he left New Japan. And the very next day, a fan on Twitter asked him. I guess Omega did a rare Twitter Q&A. He had a few minutes to kill. And somebody asked him, why have you taken a back seat in AEW when you were the hottest star in Japan? And his answer was, I lived out mostly all of my dreams during the last run that I had. And now a big part of my current dream is seeing a new generation thrive. Now, that is an admirable answer for him to give. It's nice that he's not, you know, asking Tony Khan backstage, am I fucking going over tonight? And that kind of stuff. At the same time, though, this is a brand new company. And this company needs big names. They need big stars. They need big names. The Elite were those big names. They brought them all in, right? Except for Marty. But they brought in all the Elite guys. Cody is one of those people. Chris Jericho is one of those people. These big names. Jon Moxley. And Kenny Omega should be right there alongside them. You can give back. You can be very generous. But I think it's foolish to take a back seat at a time when AEW could really use that Kenny Omega. That version of Kenny Omega, I think, is sorely missing right now from AEW. You know? But he's talking like, I had my career, and now I've moved on to the next phase of my career. The guy's 36 years old. He's not 56. The way I read that tweet, I'm like, dude, 36, not 56. But if that's what makes him happy and he thinks he can contribute more in that way, then I guess he's content to do that. I still think he winds up winning the AEW title this year, probably from Moxley, after he beats Jericho for it. But it's just funny, I was just talking about this on Wednesday and how, you know, phase down is a good way to put it, he has felt. And then he had that comment on Twitter the next day or whenever it was. Some of the YouTube comments I saw on my own video, people need to stop grading these shows on a curve or responding to any criticism of AEW, because I got tweets about this too. Any, even the slightest criticism of AEW, and the fanboys come out. Man, you remember the TNA soldiers from back in the day? Remember that whole thing? I covered that on this show years ago. This is like the AEW version of that. You've got these people, oh, you're a WWE shill, man. I bet if this happened on Raw, you would blah, 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 blah. It's still better than Raw or SmackDown. Raw and SmackDown have nothing to do with Dynamite. You are deflecting. It's okay to call things out when you don't like them, just like it's okay to praise things when you do. But when I think something is no good, I'm going to tell you that I don't think it's any good. Not everything needs to be a comparison to WWE. Stop grading these shows on a curve. If you love the show, great. But if your only argument against the people who didn't is, well, it's better than Raw or SmackDown, man, guess what? You've got no argument. You have no argument. The cherry on the shit sundae with some of these comments, though, had to be the one guy who said that, oh, it's interesting how, you know, I spend time talking about WWE or AEW segments that I don't like, and yet we just had 10 hours of Wrestle Kingdom over two nights, and there's not a peep about it. Not realizing on the very same channel that he's commenting on, I recorded two videos covering both nights of Wrestle Kingdom, plus New Year Dash, 90 minutes of audio. You look dumb. Don't think I didn't see you delete that comment either. I was in the middle of responding to it when you deleted it, you coward. It wouldn't let me post a response, so that's why you're getting one now. You can't run from me. If you do typically join the chat, by the way, for the live streams every week, and you're interested in becoming a moderator, I could use some help for any spam comments and such during the live stream. So drop me a line with your YouTube handle if you think you might be interested. I will consider you as a moderator. I might be looking to bring maybe two people on. So let me know if you think you might be interested. This Wednesday is the Bash at the Beach edition of Dynamite. Cody will respond to MJF's proposed stipulations for their match. Jon Moxley takes on Sammy Guevara. Pac takes on Darby Allin. That should be fun. Chris Statlander is going to tag with Riho to take on Awesome Kong and Melanie Cruz of the Nightmare Collective. Dustin Rhodes tags with QT Marshall and Diamond Dallas Page, seeing action for the first time, I believe, since the Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania 32. That is the last recorded item I could find on Diamond Dallas Page officially wrestling a match, so that would have been in 2016. So this could be the first time in 4 years almost that we see DDP in action in the ring. And they take on The Butcher, The Blade, and Motormouth Jackoff Friedman, as DDP called him last week. And a four-way with the winners of the match taking on SCU at a later date for the AEW tag team title. So it will be the Young Bucks, Santana and Ortiz, the Best Friends, and the team of Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. I mean, I'm thinking it's got to be Omega and Page, I would think. And then whatever blow-up might happen between them would happen during the tag team championship match against SCU. Or who knows, maybe they win the titles. And then there's tension between them as the tag team champions. But I can't imagine it's any other team here moving on other than Page and Omega. So then the week after that, they're going to be taping Dynamite a day early aboard the Chris Jericho Rockin' Wrestling Rager, since Tuesday is the day that we dock in the Bahamas, not Wednesday. That is when they are going to tape the show. They have Jericho, Santana, and Ortiz taking on the Jurassic Express. That has already been announced for the show. I will be on that cruise. Solomonster sails off. I will be on that cruise. So there will be no Dynamite stream, not this week, but next week. January 22nd. There will be no Dynamite stream, so just be aware of that. NXT this week, just some quick notes. We saw Rhea Ripley for the first time since she won the championship before the new year from Shayna Baszler. This is the start of a new era here in this NXT women's division, and Rhea now is the face of that division. Toni Storm came out to confront Rhea. They have had matches before. For the NXT UK Women's Championship, so there's a history there. She wanted to basically lay down the gauntlet and challenge Rhea to a match. And what Storm said is Tony vowed to win the NXT UK Women's Championship on Sunday at NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool, which is actually going to be going on the air in just a little bit, as I am recording this. So that Blackpool show, by the time you hear this, may well already be over. But today she is going to be competing for the championship, and then she vowed to become a double champion at Worlds Collide the night before the Royal Rumble. They're having that Worlds Collide show January 25th, if Rhea would accept her challenge, which she did. And so at Worlds Collide the night before the Rumble, Rhea Ripley will defend the NXT Women's Championship against Toni Storm. We've also got Finn Balor one-on-one against Ilya Dragunov, who had a great match with Cesaro last year at the UK TakeOver show in Cardiff. And Undisputed Era 4-on-4 are going to be taking on Imperium. That's actually shaping up to be one hell of a card. I wasn't sure if I was going to even have time to watch it, because I'm first coming back from this cruise on that Friday before the Rumble. And that night's an NWA pay-per-view. I'm not even sure if I'm going to do a podcast that weekend. I will definitely be reviewing the Royal Rumble live when the show is over on YouTube. That's for sure. But I have no idea what I'm doing for a show that week. I can't even think that far ahead right now. But now I may have to check out this Worlds Collide show, because so far this card looks pretty incredible. So Kaylee Ray made an appearance. She is the reigning, as I am talking about this, the reigning NXT UK Women's Champion. She walked out, she cut a promo on Toni Storm, and then Io Shirai showed up, and Candice LeRae and Bianca Belair. And, you know, when they do these types of segments on Raw and SmackDown, I hate them. I liked having all these women out here together. It showed me the depth they have in this women's division. But I don't know. It's just, it's so unnatural. One after the other, the music hits and they come, like they're waiting for their cue to walk out. I hate that. I hate segments like that. But it did lead to a fun six-woman tag. Ripley won for her team, pinning Bianca. That division is stacked right now. Even if you don't count the UK ladies, you know, who are only in for to promote the World's Collide event. They're not permanent members of the NXT roster. It's still a stacked division. And I'm very sad to hear that Io Shirai could leave the company when her deal is up. That was the big rumor this week, is that she is, you know, being courted to come back to Japan, to go back to stardom. She was making more money there, apparently, than she's making now in NXT. But also, not only does stardom want her and Kairi Sane back, because Kairi's another one who they would love to have her back, but I didn't realize that Io is engaged to Evil from New Japan. And it's funny, because I was like, I didn't know about this. I mean, are there any pictures of them together? And so I go to the Google machine, and I Google searched Io Shirai Evil. And that was a terrible thing to do, because all I got were posts about heel Io Shirai. It's like, what the hell else do I type here? So that didn't work. I couldn't find anything about this. But it would make sense for her to go back home. I mean, if that's what she ends up doing, because, I mean, shit, if she's making more money at home and she gets to be closer to her fiancé, why wouldn't she leave? But I would be very sad if we didn't have Io in NXT anymore. Imperium, Marcel Bartel and Fabian Aichner defeated the Forgotten Sons to advance in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. And they will meet the winners of the match between Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne against Flash Morgan Webster and Mark Andrews, that I believe we are getting on the show this week. This Matt Riddle promo, I have to talk about this real quick here. They cut to the back. It was only like a minute-long segment, but they interviewed Matt Riddle. How did your team come to be with Pete Dunne? How did the two of you come together as partners? And the way that Riddle described this, I can't even do it justice. You just need to see. It was just classic Matt Riddle. It was exactly the kind of promo you would expect from him. But he said it was basically, in so many words, it was a very simple thing where, you know, he went up to Pete and he looked at Pete and he said, hey, bro, you want to be partners? And Pete did his expression where he's like, I don't know. Okay, fine. And Matt was like, he did the whole hand shit that he does. And I'm doing a poor job of explaining it. You need to watch it for yourself. What I love about this story is, I think it might have been Alvarez who mentioned this over at F4W Online, but apparently this was not the original promo that they wanted Matt Riddle to do. They probably handed him some shit to do, and he said to Triple H, he's like, look, let me do the promo my way. Let me do it my way first, then we can do it your way. So the promo that ended up being used is the one that he did himself, and apparently when Triple H saw it, he laughed his ass off, and he's like, we got to use that. And so they just used what Riddle did on his own. And I'm glad they did. You can hear, it was almost like a laugh track in the background. People in the building, because they had piped it in so the people in the building could hear it. And they were laughing their asses off. So, anyway, this is great. This is one of the best parts of the whole show. But the key line is, so they come together, right? They both acknowledge, okay, we'll be partners. And Riddle goes, and that's how the Broserweights were born. So that's their name. They are the Broserweights. Austin Theory, he beat the returning Joaquin Wilde with a TKO. Looked impressive in doing so. Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish beat Gallus, reigning NXT UK Tag Team Champions, the team of Mark Coffey and Wolfgang, to advance in the Dusty Classic. Johnny Gargano came out for a promo. Finn Balor came out. They went back and forth on the mic. And their match is now official for the next TakeOver show next month in Portland, which would seem to crush the dreams of that one person who wrote in last week pitching the idea of Finn Balor maybe winning the Royal Rumble match. I don't see that happening. Kushida. Kushida had a mystery partner that he was going to unveil in the Dusty Classic. Well, they have revealed who his partner is going to be, and it's not Cameron Grimes, as I thought it might be. But instead, it will be his former tag team partner from New Japan as part of the Time Splitters, Alex Shelley. Alex Shelley is now making his debut here in WWE. Well, I guess he probably was on one of those syndicated shows that they still had in the mid-2000s. Like, you know, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. Technically, they were in WWE in like 2000 or 2001 on like Metal and Jacked. I'm pretty sure Alex Shelley had a match like that in WWE years ago, but officially. He's never wrestled officially, you know, as a star. Until now. After all these years, he's finally making his debut here in NXT. They're going to be taking on the grizzled young veterans from NXT UK with the winners meeting Undisputed Era in the next round. If Kushida and Alex Shelley don't at least advance to that match and wrestle Fish and O'Reilly, what the hell was even the point? Talk about a disappointment. They actually reunited the other night with a win over the Forgotten Sons at a show in Pittsburgh. So they already have their first official win in NXT. Mia Yim beat Caden Carter. After the match, Chelsea Green ran out and she knocked them both down. She knocked Mia out of the ring. And Robert Stone appeared in the aisleway. Robert Stone is the former Robbie E from TNA, and he is now dressed in a suit. He's apparently starting his own faction. He's calling it the Robert Stone brand. And I guess Chelsea Green is his first recruit. So, she won't be going to Raw or SmackDown, but that probably is a good thing. You know, now she can build her profile in NXT. And she's yet another strong addition to that women's division in NXT. I'm still waiting on Stokely Hathaway. Where's he been? I see him doing shit on social media, posting videos and everything. Everyone's always making fun of him down there in NXT. But I have yet to see him on television. I'm still waiting for Stokely Hathaway to make his NXT debut on the air. And in the main event, Keith Lee won a four-way match over Cameron Grimes, Damian Priest, and Dominik Dijakovic, pinning Grimes to become the number one contender for the North American Championship. I would have to assume that would be announced, much like Gargano and Balor, for the Portland TakeOver show next month. There was a vignette earlier on in the show with Tommaso Ciampa, basically talking about taking the NXT Championship back from Adam Cole. So they've made their decision. It's going to be Ciampa challenging Cole next, probably at TakeOver, for the title. And Keith Lee, I guess this maybe is like a little consolation prize in a way. Because you could have put Keith Lee in that spot. But then it's like, well, what do you do with Ciampa? Ciampa has the comeback story. So the timing, I guess, just didn't work. And unless Lee is going to go on to win the Rumble in some kind of a shock, him winning the North American title might just be the way to go for now. Mange over in England emailed me. He said BT Sport had their own fuck finish towards the end of NXT. They had a technical failure and missed the remainder of the show, and they showed French football instead after 3 a.m. here, no less. So annoying. Yeah, NXT is, I think NXT and NXT UK, if I'm not mistaken, are now airing on BT Sport. But apparently not all of it, according to Mange. NWA Power, some real quick thoughts on this. Zicky Dice defeated Caleb Conley to advance in the television title tournament. Thunder Rosa got a win over ODB. Nick Aldis was, I mean, talk about nuclear heat from a crowd. I only have about 200 people in the crowd, but these 200 people hated this guy. So they were just booing the shit out of Nick Aldis, the most hated man now in the NWA. And he came out and he said, you know, look, I walked away from that television title tournament because, you know, it wasn't fun for me anymore. Not because I didn't think I could get the job done in 6 minutes and 5 seconds. And he said the only place that he doesn't get the job done in 6 minutes is in the bedroom because he goes all night long. So there you go. I guess Mickey James is, we know what she's been doing in her absence. So Aldis said that he was going to wrestle Ricky Starks here on this show because he saw something in Starks. I see something in this kid. And he said he's going to make this kid in 6 minutes and 5 seconds or less. So they have a match. Starks was locked in the clover leaf. He held on and they hit the 6 minute 5 second time limit. Time ran out. He survived. Like Jungle Boy with Chris Jericho on Impact. Or there's too much wrestling on TV, goddammit. On Dynamite. Now I'm getting my shows mixed up. Soon I'm going to be saying, oh, Jericho wrestled Jungle Boy on the NWA Power Hour from all those years ago. He beat him on Worldwide. And next week, I can't wait to watch Rhea Ripley wrestle on Primetime Wrestling. Jesus Christ. So, Ricky Starks, he survived. He lasted. Ricky Morton comes out, and he wants Nick Aldis to give Ricky Starks 5 more minutes. He's like Lex Luger wanting 5 more minutes from Tatanka in the King of the Ring tournament. And Aldis basically had about the same amount of luck that Tatanka did in getting those 5 minutes into King of the Ring, which he never did. Never did get those 5 minutes, and neither did Ricky Starks here. So Aldis refused, and he left. The main event, wild cards were supposed to be in the match. They never showed up. It was Eli Drake and James Storm beating Colt Cabana and Ken Anderson by DQ. They're doing this angle here where Colt Cabana thinks that Ken Anderson, he's a good person. He's not this bad person that everybody thinks he is. He's a good dude. He's a friend of mine. He's a good dude. Of course, he's not a good dude. And in fact, in this match here, he put his hands on the referee and got them DQ'd, which Cabana was not very happy about when the match was over. So Stu Bennett's on commentary. He's talking about how, you know, Anderson is every single week, this guy is just losing it more and more and more. And anyway, we'll see where the story goes. I'm not totally invested in this, but we'll see where the story goes. The show ended. Strictly Business is out there. Nick Aldis is out there. He says, the wild cards, I pulled the wild cards from the match. It was me. And he goes, you know, for Ricky Morton, calling out Ricky Morton, he says, the Rock and Roll Express, they show up. And Aldis says, next week, there's going to be a 6-man tag. And if Ricky Morton's team wins, then he, as in Morton, will get an NWA title match. Morton says, I've been in the ring with the best NWA World's Heavyweight Champions. I've gone 60 minutes. I was never a champion due to backstage politics. So he agreed to the offer. So we have our match set for the show this week. And Aldis said that, you know, they will not actually be part of the 6-man tag. He doesn't want Morton to have any excuses. If he gets his title match, he wants to be, I guess, fresh for it. So Aldis's team will be the wild cards, and their partner is going to be this man. And with music, he was the only person to get music on the show, out from in the crowd comes Big Papa Pump, Scott Steiner, to what sounded like his WWE theme music. I mean, like, exactly the same theme he used in WWE. Am I the only one who noticed this? I didn't see anybody else mention this. I mean, unless it is just unbelievably just that identical, but there's some kind of subtle difference that my ears didn't pick up on. It sounded like his theme song from WWE. I don't know how they were able to use that. But down the stairs he came. He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. He just showed up and then they went off the air. So we don't know why he's here. We haven't heard from him yet. You know, it was kind of like a little cliffhanger there. I think that Scott Steiner is perfect for this show. Now, do I need to see Scott Steiner on TV every week? I was just talking earlier about Big Show is back and DDP is wrestling and what year is it? But I'm going to tell you why I like this and why I think that this show is the perfect fit for Scott Steiner. This is not a show, at least the week to week, maybe not the pay-per-views, but the weekly television. This NWA Power Show is not a show that relies much, to be honest, on the in-ring stuff. They have matches. They're not long matches. They're not crazy wild matches that you'd see on Dynamite or even Raw some weeks and stuff like that. That's just not the way the show was designed. This is a show that is built off of promos and personalities. That is what this show is all about. It's the studio show. It is built off promos and personalities like the studio shows from 30 years ago. Scott Steiner, I do not need to see Scott Steiner wrestling in the ring. I do not want to see Scott Steiner wrestling in the ring, but if Scott Steiner is going to come out on this show every week or some weeks and cut Steiner promos, then I'm all for it. I'm all for it. That's his strong suit. That's what Scott Steiner can bring to the table at this stage of his life. Probably a bunch of crazy, whacked out promos that people are just going to, they're going to turn them into memes. I'm sure that's what the NWA is hoping for. So I am very interested to see what this first Scott Steiner promo. Now, remember, in the NWA, you know, for most of these guys anyway, it's not like they hand you a script and say, here, read this. So this is not just Scott Steiner on TV cutting promos, but unlike WWE and WCW, he's probably not being handed anything to read. I mean, they'll tell him maybe bullet points, but he's going to have a not live, but he'll have a microphone and he'll just get to riff. There's no telling what's going to come out of this guy's mouth. So that's why I think he is the perfect fit for this NWA show. And all this I mentioned earlier in the predictions that he showed up at the Ring of Honor event yesterday and was chased off by Marty Scurll. So they're back in bed in some way with Ring of Honor, and they're going to promote that match. You know, again, probably for the pay-per-view between Nick Aldis and Marty Scurll. I want to get to some of your mailbag questions. So the RSPW Rewind, I will save that for next week's show. So we'll skip a week. RSPW Rewind will be back in 1 week. For the mailbag, though, if you want to email me questions, the place to do so is thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Quick update on the Sexy Boy theme song challenge. You remember that from last week? I played clips from the Full Metal version of Shawn Michaels' theme song that came out in 1996. And I played the arena version that we've been hearing for years on television. There is a distinct difference. It's the same song, but there's a distinct difference between the two versions in terms of just how they sound. But I wasn't sure. I thought maybe I'm crazy. So let me play it. You guys will hear it. And then you can chime in and let me know what you think. I got a lot of feedback from you. And the consensus is that I am not crazy. Or if I am crazy, but not over that. Many of you hear the same difference that I hear when I listen to the Full Metal version of the song and the arena version. It's they fiddled with the settings in some way. And the Full Metal version just sounds a lot worse. Sadly, that's the version they have on Spotify. So you have to go to YouTube to listen to the real version. But at least I know I'm not out of my mind. And most of you agree with me. Mange from England. Oh, hey, look, Mange is back. Mange from England. I've been thinking about who would be a surprise Royal Rumble winner. And the name I've picked is Kofi Kingston. Stop laughing, he says. I picked Kofi because he hasn't faced Brock in a rematch since losing quickly last year. I would love to see him win the Royal Rumble match and go on to challenge Brock as a redemption story at WrestleMania. What say you? Well, I said earlier, I don't have any interest in that. I think you can make it work as a redemption story. You could tell that story. And Kofi has had so many hope spots in the Rumble over the years, it became a gimmick where he would be thrown out, but he wouldn't be eliminated. How's he going to find his way back in? And that's all he was really ever known for. So for him to finally win the Rumble would be kind of cool, but I just think there's so many other ways you can go with it. He had his run. It's time to just go in a different direction. So between that and watching him get squashed in 8 seconds, no, I don't have any interest in seeing that. Neil from Chicago, what if Dio Madden is the one that eliminates Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble? Do you think this could be the start of a Heyman project where Dio is booked like the next big intense killer? He could be a surprise in the Rumble. You know, maybe they give him a Maven moment where he eliminates Brock. I don't see what purpose that serves. He's not going to wrestle him at WrestleMania. I don't see Dio Madden as this big intense killer. I'm not even sure he's ready to be on the main roster yet. I think that he will be at some point, and he's got impressive size, and he could be a star one day, but he hasn't even wrestled on NXT television, and he's been working the NXT live events in Florida now for years. To suddenly book him as a monster on Raw, I think would be premature, you know, but to give him a Rumble moment where he goes face-to-face with Brock, but in the end, Brock dumps him out, yeah, that would be fine, but as a big, intense killer, I don't see it. And Andrew from Rochester, Minnesota. Several times over the last week, I found myself thinking about Okada's time in TNA and how TNA's booking ended the working relationship between the two companies that had allowed us to see Tanahashi, Naito, Goto, Nakamura, and others in TNA over the years. At the time, Okada was a long way from being the Okada of today, and TNA knew going in that they were only going to have him for maybe a year or two. While the Okado gimmick was certainly stupid, creating a gimmick off of a current movie is hardly new. While I'm not defending TNA's booking of the man with a young lion with no proven ability to draw, in need of a lot of polishing that you will only have for a short period of time, how far do you push him, and how would you have booked Okada? Look, I would not have had him beating everybody on my roster, but I also would not have dressed him up as Kato from the Green Hornet. He looked ridiculous. He looked ridiculous. He barely wrestled, and when he did, he lost most of his matches. Now, Okada has on occasion had good things to say about his time in TNA, even though they didn't do much of anything with him. I mean, there was one or two interviews I've seen where, and maybe he was kind of joking, where they brought it up and he was like, I don't want to talk about it. But in other interviews, he has actually been complimentary of the time that he spent with TNA. And even though they didn't do anything in the ring with him, he was complimentary of them from the perspective of learning about creating a character. He said when he was just a wrestler, like in Japan, he was a wrestler. That's all he was. When he went to TNA and he was just Okada, the wrestler, they did nothing with him. The agents would keep telling him in the back, you need a character, you need a character. So he created the Rainmaker character. And he took it back with him to New Japan. That was his biggest takeaway from his time in the United States. It taught him that it was not enough to just be athletic in the ring. He needed some kind of persona that would get people's attention. So his time in TNA was not a total waste. You know, in the last few years, though, Scott D'Amore, he was over in Japan visiting at one of the New Japan shows, and he addressed the locker room and he apologized. He apologized to Okada for the way that he was used. Now, that probably had more to do with him trying to get back into the good graces of New Japan. It didn't work, nor was it D'Amore's fault. I mean, he was, you know, the way Okada was used, I don't even think Scott D'Amore was in the company at that time, you know, when they had Okada, but he apologized anyway. But it's wild to think that TNA had guys like Okada, and they had guys like Naito, and to see the kind of stars they went on to become, you know, to go back and see Naito, for example, wrestling Kevin Nash and being powerbombed and pinned by Kevin Nash as a nobody, it's just very weird to see. But you could probably say that about anybody who went on to become a big star, you know, early on in their career, when they were not a big star, that's what happened. You know, you lost. You lost to the bigger stars. Who knew that Naito would go on to become what he became? Who knew that Okada would go on to become the Rainmaker? I'm not so sure the Okada thing is the only reason for New Japan not wanting to work with Impact. I know that's part of it. But I think there were other issues during that time that they were working together. I think Russo may have booked like an IWGP tag team title change without New Japan's consent or without them even knowing about it. They found out about it after the fact. This was like around the time that Team 3D were the champions. And that pissed them off a lot. As I mean, look, if they didn't know that their titles were being changed hands, yeah, I'd be pissed off too. The Okada thing, I think, though, came later. So maybe that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. But it is worth pointing out that, you know, for all the stuff they didn't do with him and the way he was treated, and, you know, he looked like an idiot with that dumb character that came up for him, the idea of him coming up with his own character is something that happened while he was in TNA. And he took it back with him to Japan, and it just took him to that next level. We'll end there. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send all of your questions and comments. And you can follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster. Next weekend, I will probably be doing Royal Rumble predictions, because I'm going to be on this cruise the week after. So I hate doing predictions that early before the go-home shows even happen. I mean, they'll probably still be announcing matches for the Rumble pay-per-view a few days before the freaking event, but I have no choice. So we'll do early Royal Rumble predictions next week. RSPW Rewind will be back. I'm sure there will be a ton of other shit to talk about. Hopefully nobody tweets something sad this week, but if they do, you know that I'll be here to talk about it. And that'll be episode 635 before I fly out for this Jericho cruise. It's interesting because you got to pay, it's like $100 or something to pay for internet access on this cruise. So I'm not doing anything yet because I'm on vacation. So I kind of don't want to be doing work if it could be avoided. So I'm not paying anything. I'm just going to go on the boat. I probably won't even have internet access. So I don't know when you guys are going to hear from me that week, but we have time to worry about that. In the meantime, have yourselves a great week. I will see you for the Dynamite live stream this Wednesday, Bash at the Beach style. And then next weekend, episode 635 might possibly be going up a day early because I have to fly out pretty early on Sunday. So if there is a show, pretty good chance it will drop sometime on Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. Just be aware of that. I will keep all of you posted on Twitter for those of you who are curious. That's it. I'm out of here. Take care, guys. I will see you on Wednesday and back here next weekend for more Sound Off.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Hello.
This is Morrison versus Adam Cole, Morrison versus Finn Balor, Morrison versus Tommaso Ciampa, Morrison versus Keith.
Let me ask you a question. Were you drinking during the pay-per-view tonight?
I was.
Okay, I thought so. Okay.
The Sala Monster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Sala Monster on Twitter @SalaMonster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Put that cigarette out.
Sala Monster sounds off.